on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking with Abe Amoros, Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union. They're going to be talking about the new fatality numbers that just came out from the BLS. It turns out that in the construction industry, they are leading the pack of all industries of workers killed on the jobs, and laborers are the subset of the construction industry most often killed on the job. So we're going to talk to Abe about that. Also about the right to work legislation that the radicals here in the state of Pennsylvania want to ram through and what that will mean to laborers here in Pennsylvania, what it means across the country. Also, we're going to talk with Greg Smith, president and CEO of the Pennsylvania State Employee Credit Union, about what's going on at Bank of America and the death watch there at BOA. Also talk about the foreclosure problem and everything that's coming on down the line. Also, Lee Fong is going to be here, investigative researcher and blogger for Think Progress. He's going to be here talking about the former Goldman Sachs VP who I guess just decided one day it would be better if he changed his name to his mother's maiden name so he could be a Daryl Issa staffer so that they could attack Elizabeth Warren. You know, again, you know, you got to wonder about all of this cloak and dagger stuff, why you would change your name when you're a multimillionaire like this guy. Just kind of makes you wonder. So the good news, Hershey's offering a vacation to those workers who they've been screwing for some time. And I love the guy who's the chief executive of the Council for Educational Travel, a guy named Rick Anya. He said that his organization is going to pay for day trips to either Philadelphia or the Gettysburg battlefield. So here you go, kids. You get $3,000 to $6,000 to pay for this and work in slave conditions. We're gonna reward you with a day trip to the Liberty Bell or to the battlefield. And I gotta tell you, I don't think these kids need a trip to the Liberty Bell. I don't think these kids need a trip to the battlefields. I think they've proven their mettle. They've proven that they're willing to stand up and fight. I think they've proven that they get the idea of what this country was founded on. I think they get that. And I think that they stood up and said, no more. We're going to demand what you Americans should be demanding. And I still find it, I'm still boiling, and we got to get this guy on the show, this guy, this Richard Mace. From Lebanon. I'm just flipped at this editorial that he wrote in the Lebanon Daily News. It just got me angry that this guy completely misses the point, saying that, well, you know, all they want, you know, they were offered free cultural bus trips and they were offered other things. It leads me to believe they didn't want any of that. They just want, they're troublemakers. They're only interested, and this is his quote, they are only interested in inciting unrest as their counterparts in Europe are doing. Yeah, all those kids from, you know, Africa and China, in Europe. Yeah, I get that right away. Right there with you, brother. And in fact, he goes into saying that we should be sending the CIA to their home countries to look into whether these students, in quotation marks, are aligned with any unsavory groups in their home country. Because after all, anytime you want people to come together and to organize, that's a leftist revolution. Anytime you say, you know what, you don't like what's going on, organize and change it, that's a leftist revolution. They're tried and true tactics of the leftist revolutionaries, according to this guy. Now, this is a T-twit. And I would go back to 2010, and I stop and I think about exactly what he's saying here. Oh, this bottom-up thing. Oh, this inside-out tactic. Oh, this having some organization. Oh, it's the leftist revolutionaries. Isn't that exactly what the T-twits were claiming that they were doing? Even though we know it was a complete top-down edict, even we know that the Koch brothers funded the vast majority of it, isn't that what they claimed they were doing? It was a remember the words? Spontaneous organization. It was spontaneous. It just happened. It was like you're walking down the street and boom, you caught on fire. Spontaneous combustion. Boom, it just happened. But he's calling these kids socialists because they don't love freedom and liberty. And I would argue just the opposite. These are kids who were working in slave labor conditions and said no more. We would like some freedom. We would like to go for some freedom to go see the Liberty Bell on our own, maybe see the battlefields, not have to fight it at the job site. And they understood. They understood freedom and liberty. Maybe a little bit better than this guy does. And I keep going back that we need to send the CIA to their home countries, and maybe we need to be following them because they want a better future, because they want their work to be rewarded. I just find it absolutely amazing. And this guy, I'm sure the Becks of the world would be thrilled with, because he has taken their talking points and married them to himself, has no self-identity, is, you know, just mirroring what they say. So I'm sure tomorrow, Mr. Mace here will be spewing about how the National Labor Relations Board, these dictators at the NLRB, they issued their new ruling, this final rule change that's going to require employers to notify employees of their rights under the NLRA. And they're supposed to do that by November 14th of this year. They've got a period to take care of that. The right wing is going nuts about this. The business community all up in arms because, you know what? Most people, I don't think, know what their rights are. You know, these kids taught us all a lesson. They're going to get something out of this by standing up and fighting back. They may get their money back. They got a vacation out of it at least. That's more than most American workers get out of going to work in sweatshop conditions every day. So good for them on that vein. Maybe you take that and maybe you learn from that lesson. But here's the thing. You know, the NLRB, you know, they sought comments. They got some 6,500 comments over a 2-month period. They took another 500 comments after the deadline. And they, you know, they issued their final rules. They modified it a little bit. Employers aren't going to have to email or text or voicemail, even if they do use that as part of their regular communication. So they made a little changes there. But the right's just going absolutely beyond the nuts. But the rule will be published in the Federal Registry tomorrow, and it will take effect 75 days from then, which will be on November 14th. Also, the right is losing their mind over another decision by the U.S. Department of Labor to mandate some very simplistic things for people who are sheep and goat herders. And we don't think about that. It's kind of funny. But this guy from the Heritage Foundation wrote a cute little piece, and I just wanted to read real quick through it because I think it's kind of funny. His name is Ernst Eistuck. Ernst Eistuck. He says the U.S. Department of Labor thinks sheep and goat herding is so important that it issued a whole new set of regulations that illustrate just how big and bossy our government has become. Despite millions of unemployed, most shepherds are immigrant workers who the feds decided they need special protection, so the federal government says the employer must. They must provide those people with cell phones. They must give them a place to live with comfy beds and lighting and laundry and bathroom and cooking and refrigeration. How dare the government do this? How dare they? He says, our tax dollars are paying bureaucrats to spell out what makes a bed comfortable and design a kitchen on a ranch. Here's the thing here, Ernst. There's a reason for the cell phone out in the middle of nowhere. Somebody could get hurt, and you might need to get someone to the hospital. And what's amazing to me is the employer didn't do this as a matter of being a decent, benevolent corporation. So there was a need for this, Ernst. And as far as the bed and lighting and laundry and bathroom and cooking and refrigeration area, have you seen some of the places where farm workers live? Some of the conditions that these poor people have to endure because the benevolent corporation has decided that, let's just let them sleep outside. It's nice, airy, open time. Let them sleep outside. Maybe we should just waterboard them. I'm sure our friends on the extreme right would be thrilled with the idea of waterboarding them. I'm sure you saw Cheney out today saying that, we're very happy. We no regrets that we waterboarded people. In fact, we should be doing it now. And maybe we should do it to those workers. And I look at this guy from Lebanon. I'm sure he would have no problem in his free country of waterboarding these kids. Of torturing these kids. And like yesterday, I talked about the guy with the Gatling gun, telling the guy from B&O Railroad, we could clear the street with one Gatling gun. All those workers, don't need them. Take right care of it. But here's the thing. And I look at these kids, and I got to be honest. I'm truly, honestly and truthfully, I am taken aback by the courage and the organization, considering you're talking about numerous languages, you're talking about a number of different people from different countries, all the obstacles that come out of this, and yet they still stood up and they still fought back. I think that's something for all of us to learn. It's a lesson for all of us. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Abe Amoros, Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union.
To the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Republican Congressman Paul Ryan is still giving his unemployed constituents the cold shoulder, but that's not stopping jobless workers from continuing to demand that Ryan at least pretend that he represents them as well as corporations. Jesse Russell has more.
On day 5 of the unemployed demanding a meeting with Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan, protesters showing up in the morning were greeted by a locked office and security provided by the Kenosha Police Department. Scott Page is one of the Ryan 7, and he said the police told him they would not be allowed in the building without an appointment.
So we tried to call, and they won't answer the phone. So basically they posted a police officer here that told us he would warn us one time before arresting us.
Meanwhile, a handful of protesters spent a second day spreading the demands for a face-to-face meeting at the Congressman's Racine, Wisconsin office.
On Friday, the AFL-CIO joins the King Center in hosting a national symposium on jobs, justice, and the American dream in Washington, D.C. It'll feature worker activists, civil rights activists, elected leaders, academics, and youth activists. AFL-CIO's Arlene Holt-Baker says the symposium is about highlighting the needs of struggling working families, the same families that Dr. King devoted his life to fighting for. Martin Luther King III says one of the last acts of his father's life was advocating for sanitation workers in Memphis, and Dr. King firmly believed that workers' rights were an essential element of civil rights. He says unions and their members were steadfast allies in the movement for human dignity, championed by Dr. King. A new program being launched by the Environmental Protection Agency could be good news for the unemployed. The EPA announced Tuesday it was hoping to use $6 million to specifically hire the unemployed as it moves forward on the Great Lakes Restoration Program. The agency is taking a page from Franklin D. Roosevelt's Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps by earmarking the money. The program was designed to help the chronically unemployed get back on their feet and is often touted as one of the most successful aspects of the New Deal. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The WIN, who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics released today, in 2010, there were 4,547 workers who died on the job due to workplace injury. That has pretty much remained unchanged from the year before. 751 construction workers died on the job in 2010, a 10% decline. But they're saying that's due to the fact that you'd had so many fallen hours because of the recession. If you had more people working, nobody wants to talk about that. However, the construction industry remained at the top of the on-the-job fatalities list, with the largest number of fatalities being those in the laborers segment of the construction industry. 174 of those construction laborers died on the job in 2010. Trucking, farming, and mining, the usual dangerous jobs, remained high. Some 1,400 lives lost on the job there. And police officers saw a rise of 40% to 134 policemen killed on the job and women killed on the job in 2010. But, you know, that 174 laborers killed on the job in 2010 caught my attention, and that's why I've asked our good friend Ava Amoros. He's the Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union of North America to come talk to us. Abe, thanks for taking time for me.
You're welcome, Rick. Thank you for having me.
I look at this number and I say, you know, 751 construction workers killed on the job. And the first thing that pops into my head is, you know, how many of those were union workers? How many of them were non-union workers? And how do we get that number down?
Exactly. I think what we need to, first of all, we need to analyze how many are union and non-union. And then we need to really ask ourselves, are our workers in the safest possible environments? And, you know, one of the things that pops into mind, Rick, is I'd like to know which right-to-work states these fatalities took place in. As you know, right-to-work is not a very good concept that 22 states have adopted throughout the country, most of them in the southern part of the country. And I'd like to figure out where these fatalities are and then break those down, union versus non-union. And, you know, I'm hoping that it's not mostly in those right-to-work states, but if it were, I mean, that gives us another argument, so to speak, as to why right-to-work is not a good thing throughout the country.
Yeah, and I look at this, and you bring that up, and, you know, the very people that the Romneys of the world and the Daryl Metcalfs of the world want to cheat out of a decent living are the folks who are dying on the job. All of these folks, policemen, construction workers, truck drivers, miners, you know, the whole farming people, all of that.
That's absolutely right. We know that the union workers are some of the best trained. They have to go through rigorous safety standards. They have experience beyond belief. in those jobs. And then, of course, in construction, you have to put in the hours. You have to put in the training, especially in safety measures. And construction work is no joke, Rick, as you know. I mean, we do the most difficult work that's out there. I mean, the strenuously difficult work. And you know, our guys have to be out there in heat. They have to be out there when it's raining. They're out there when it's cold and miserable. And some of these conditions are less than ideal, you know, to put in an honest day's work for an honest day's pay.
Right.
And so we have to be really cognizant of that. And again, I really want to dig into those statistics again, simply because it would be interesting to see where these fatalities took place.
You know, one of the things that the study, the release points out is that most of the workers that were killed on the job were killed in highway incidents and falls. And I look at that highway incidents, you know, truck drivers and, of course, laborers, you know, working on roads.
That's right. That's exactly right. We're definitely in the line of fire as it relates to dangerous job conditions. And, you know, unions obviously stressed the need for safety, the need for training. And this is why we have some of the best paid, because we have the most highly qualified craftsmen out there that are doing these jobs. And it's really incumbent upon all of us to realize how hard these jobs are, how difficult they are, and how dangerous they can be.
You know, there are some that say, well, you know, we need to have this hyper competition where, you know, the very cheapest labor should get the job. So we can have a transient workforce. We can have, you know, traveling work crews. You know, in states like Utah, who found out the hard way what happens when you deal a death blow to your local construction industry. And I don't want to have to learn that lesson here in Pennsylvania. I want the people who are building my kid's school to actually live in the neighborhood, maybe even their kid sit in the classroom next to mine.
Absolutely. I mean, we can learn from the mistakes of other states. Why do we have to create our own set of mistakes? And that's what this legislature is looking at. You know, I testified last week before the House Labor and Industry Committee on four pieces of legislation that made absolutely no sense for working families whatsoever. And, you know, part of my testimony was pointing out that there were 22 states that have right-to-work bills, right-to-work laws in place. And why do we want to join the ranks of Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia and Louisiana? I mean, why do we want to go down that path where their wages are suppressed, the work conditions are abominable in many instances, and they're using the cheapest labor? And you're not going to tell me that a guy that's making $7 an hour is going to be as qualified as a person that has significant experience, significant training, who has earned $17 an hour. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And what we're doing, Rick, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, the corporate world out there is really trashing the guys that make a living on their feet, busting their backs day in and day out, and it's just not fair to them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Now, you've testified on these bills. Is there anyone that you've talked to, anyone that has questioned you, any testimony that you've seen that will say that if we make Pennsylvania and can guarantee if we turn Pennsylvania into a right-to-work site, that it's going to bring jobs here, that this is a job creator? Anybody?
Absolutely not. And, Rick, that's the funny thing, because those who were testifying in opposition to me, who wanted right-to-work, kept citing that businesses basically look to see if Pennsylvania is a right-to-work state, and that would draw them. That is absolute nonsense. We all know that businesses look at other factors. They look at a qualified workforce, which we have. They look at location. They look at a tax rate. They look at geography. They don't look at right-to-work, and not one study was produced by the other side that said, yes, we're going to look at that because we'd like to move into Pennsylvania if it's a right-to-work state. That would clinch the deal. I mean, they stumble, Rick. Every time you ask them the question, they stumble. And a few legislators tried to get cute, and it just didn't work. I mean, it just fell flat on its face. Businesses don't ask if a state is right-to-work as an incentive to go in there and set up shop. They look at the workforce. And, of course, we have a very good qualified workforce in Pennsylvania. They could do a lot of jobs because they're highly skilled. They're very well trained, and they have very good experience.
They couldn't come up with one study, not even that Tea Party think tank over there at the Commonwealth Foundation. They couldn't make something up. They couldn't. They couldn't hand something to Pierre Dean to read poorly.
Rick, I'll tell you, I had trouble listening to that testimony. It made very little sense. The arguments were flat. They were not very compelling. And, it sounded as if they just wanted right to work as an ideologue, as an ideology. And, this right to work legislation smacks of hostile ideology against labor unions. They're not based on sound, logical business practices. And I don't understand why the Commonwealth Foundation, with a national unemployment figure at 9.1%, and ours being at 7.6% in Pennsylvania, how would turning the state into a right-to-work state benefit us? It only hurts our workers. And what they fail to realize, Rick, is that not only would it impact union employees, but it would also impact non-union employees. Yep. It just makes no sense. They're hurting everybody.
So while you were testifying, the other question I have on this, did anyone throw out, you said there were nothing from the think tank over there, nothing from the Tea Party think tank. Did they come out with anything on that this is going to save me, the taxpayer, money? Anything in there? Any money savings? Any guarantees? Anything like that?
No. No money-saving examples, no guarantees. And I got to tell you, I admonished one state legislator because he asked me how I could sit there and say that right to work is going to harm workers when, in essence, taxpayers are going to benefit from it. Not a single shred of proof. And you know what, Rick? They tried the same thing the week before with prevailing wage. And I admonished him. I said, I wish this legislature would stop saying that right to work and prevailing wage is going to be passed along to the taxpayer in terms of savings. That's BS. What's going to happen is that contractor is going to pocket that difference. That money is going to go right to the top. What you're doing is you're taking from the bottom and you're putting it at the top. And that's just wrong.
And if I'm not mistaken, there have been a couple of examples of that. One here in Pennsylvania, and I think in Ohio as well, where they suspended the prevailing wage for a time, and actually the bids that came back were higher than the bids when prevailing wage was in place, if I'm not mistaken.
You are absolutely correct. I saw that myself, and what's happening is that the contractors are getting wise to it, and they're padding the difference, and they're pocketing it. It's not being passed along to taxpayers. For them to say that is absolutely disingenuous. I called them out on it. Yes.
Let me ask you this. I was talking to somebody. We were at the Franklin County Democratic Sunfest 2011 last weekend. I had a wonderful time, met some fantastic people out there. But one person said that, the reason that Democrats in that area are against prevailing wage is because the local employers, they won't go after any prevailing wage projects because for one reason or another. And I surmised it's probably because those local contractors don't want their employees to know what the prevailing wage is and then comparing it to how little they're earning.
Bingo. You hit the nail right on the head. And, Rick, there's also another concerted effort, by the ABC, the Contractors Association. They don't want to submit their rates to the Department of Labor and Industry because they don't want to see what they're paying their employees. So, the reason why they're not bidding on these jobs is because they don't want people to know what they're paying their workers. And how are you going to lift up those wages if you don't participate? The more people who participate in the survey, the more who give the Department of Labor and Industry statistics and figures, the higher the wages are going to be. And what you're going to do is you're going to draw a more qualified workforce. And the projects are going to be better, and that's what saves taxpayer dollars. When you have the very best and most qualified people working on these jobs, particularly public works projects. I mean, I want somebody who's a skilled craftsman working on one of my roads or one of my bridges. I mean, that's a safety issue. That not only saves money, but it saves lives in the end.
I remember sitting on the George Washington Bridge, which is in New York City, several hundred feet off the ground, in an 80,000-pound vehicle with a whole bunch of other 80,000-pound vehicles surrounding me where I sat for a couple hours, and I couldn't get the thought out of my mind that lowest bid got the contract.
That's right. And when lowest bid gets the contract, that means that they're able to cut corners, that they're able to hire non-skilled employees who don't have that craftsmanship that is necessary to ensure that that project is being done right the first time.
So let me just to reiterate, because I think it's extremely important when talking about right to work or talking about prevailing wage or any of these no rights at work agenda bills that the Metcalfs of the world are pushing out there and the radical right are throwing out there. In none of this can you find any savings for the taxpayers or any job creation?
No, sir. There's absolutely nothing that points to either job creation or saving taxpayer dollars. Nothing at all. And I have read studies. I have tried to come up with a shred of proof, and I just can't do it.
So why are they doing it?
They're doing it because this is a collective measure to weaken collective bargaining, to weaken unions, and to really attack us on an ideological basis. And Rick, I mean, let me just cut to the chase. They do the math. There are more of them than there are of us, especially in the House of Representatives right now. And fortunately, the state Senate has said that they have no appetite for any of these bills. However, that does not give our side a reason for pause. We have to be extraordinarily vigilant in letting all of our legislators know that right-to-work legislation is a bust, that anti-prevailing wage legislation should not be passed, and that, workers' rights are being attacked in Pennsylvania, and we can't afford it. We just simply can't afford it, especially in these tough times. I mean, in construction, Rick, our guys, we're experiencing 30% unemployment, 30%, man. I mean, we're already seasonal as it is.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Abe, what they'll say, Abe, is, well, if we could pay them $1 an hour, we could put them all back to work.
And they're wrong. I don't know anybody who can sustain a family on $1 an hour, $4 an hour, or even $7 an hour. I mean, that is below the poverty rate. And for them to say that is absolutely disingenuous. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier, Rick, is what they're doing is they're taking from the bottom to pad the top, and that's wrong. And we need to be vocal about it. We need to raise Cain with our legislators. We need to go visit them. We need to be vigilant and say enough is enough.
Absolutely.
Create jobs.
Yep.
Don't do this anymore. What you're doing is you're hurting families. You're hurting unions. You're doing it intentionally. And what you're doing is you're trying to show that you have more muscle than the other side, and it's just wrong.
You know, lastly, what it tells me, and maybe you'll disagree or agree or disagree, but it tells me that they have no other ideas, they have no vision, there's no real leadership on how to get us out of this. It's all about, you know, I always use the analogy of a carpenter. Anybody with a hammer, if you got a hammer, it doesn't make you a carpenter. Anybody can tear a house down with a hammer. It takes somebody with some skill to actually use that hammer to build a house. They're
That's
not
right.
carpenters. They're just guys walking around with hammers.
You know, I believe exactly what you're saying. Now, I'm going to call out Representative Scott Perry because I have to. He sat at a prevailing wage hearing and said, I don't understand how you can ask us to create jobs. We don't create jobs. Well, I beg to disagree. That Transportation Commission that came out a few weeks ago, Rick, recommended that we have over 5,000 bridges that are in really bad shape. I mean, really bad shape. Now, in order to fix those, you need to spend money. That report said that they recommended $2.7 billion in terms of an allocation to fix those roads and to fix those bridges. The last time I checked, the legislature signed off on those. So for him to say that the government can't create jobs is wrong. When you have a strong infrastructure jobs program in place, I mean, that's allocating money from the state legislature to make sure that people are put back to work.
Now, here again, another guy who doesn't understand the basic functions of government. It's all about blind hate ideology. Abe, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you. Love to have you back again real soon.
You got it, pal.
Our good friend Abe Amoros, the Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union of North America. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk.
Rick Smith Show.
The higher the monkey climbs, the more you see of its ugly side. So here comes Rick Perry of Texas, trying to climb the national political ladder all the way to the presidency. He's really two candidates in one suit. On the surface, Perry is vying to be the furthest out of the Tea Party Republicans' far-out right-wingers. Sort of Michelle Bachmann with better hair. He wants to scuttle Social Security and Medicaid. Also, he says the federal government should not be, quote, regulating the environment, protecting civil rights, or even creating national minimum wage laws. At his core, though, Perry governs as an exuberant plutocrat, happily doling out public dollars and favors to the corporate rich who've invested in his political career. He also pleases the privileged by slashing government spending on everything from public schools to health care. Among the 204 wealthy supporters who put between $100,000 and $2 million into his governorship are AT&T, Bank of America, ExxonMobil, the Koch brothers, T. Boone Pickens, Harold Simmons, Time Warner, Valero Energy, and Walmart. So pleased are such elites by the return they've received on their Perry portfolio that they will form, as the New York Times put it, a vast network eager to bankroll his presidential ambitions. If this sounds vaguely familiar, think back only a decade to another corporate-funded Texas buckaroo in the White House, George W. Bush. Perry is Bush, only not as smart or ethical, and Bush at least professed to be a compassionate conservative. None of that sissy liberal stuff for Rick. He actually brags that, hey, we stick it to the middle class and the poor so the rich can get richer. Yeehaw! This is Jim Hightower saying, so when Perry promises he'll do for America what he's done for Texas, pay attention. It's no idle threat.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Or check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, you can go to our website, grab the podcast, or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take the program with you on the go. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Happy birthday today to Alan Pinkerton. Everyone remembers who Alan Pinkerton was. This was the day he was born back in 1819. You remember him, the strike-breaking detective agency, the Pinkertons, which came, the word Pinks, which gave us the word Fink. So very interesting. So happy birthday to him, back in 1819. Well, I don't know if you saw this today, but Rich Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO, he warned Democrats, and it's about time, to either ship up or shape up or labor's shipping out. He said, if they don't have a jobs program, I think we better use our money doing other things. And I got to be honest, I agree with him. Talking Points memo pointed out Trumka saying that this is a moment that working people and, quite frankly, history will judge President Obama on his presidency. Will he commit to all his energy and focus on bold solutions on the job crisis, or will he continue to work with the Tea Party to offer cuts to middle-class programs like Social Security, all while pretending the deficit is where our economic problems really lie? And, I mean, I'm glad he's out here saying something. It's about time. He also threatened that they may withdraw from attending the upcoming Democratic convention in South Carolina. That would be huge. So, you know, the crisis, you know, job crisis. Or is he going to continue with the Tea Party? I mean, that's pretty strong stuff. And considering, you know, the recent polls that have come out that have put the Tea Party below atheists, Muslims, gays, and even liberals, all groups the Tea Twits hate, I may add, I find it funny that Trumka made that charge and kind of popped that out there. Right now it's time for the Democrats to stand up and be counted. And this thing with Romney, this has got the Democrats' name on it. They have better stand up and fight back on this, because this is where the Democrats go, we're with you, Labor. Every one of the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, they are against working people. This is an opportunity for Democrats. And if Democrats don't, if we don't see something different from what they've been doing, I think Labor should withhold its money and do something else. And I was looking at Gawker, Gawker.com, and they had the story on this that I didn't use, but you know, they had some comments at the bottom, and I thought the comments were brilliant. So I just run through them. A guy named Jack Paper writes, "Dear unions, we feel you. Love the gays." Mrs. Beaton writes, "Dear unions and gays, right there with you. Love the ladies." Candid Yams writes, "Dear unions, gays, and ladies, we share the same pain, the blacks." Quantum Suicide writes, "Dear unions, gays, blacks, and ladies, it's certainly been a couple of rough years, hasn't it? Love the Latinos." MW Aussie writes, "Dear unions, gays, ladies, blacks, and Latinos. What were we talking about again? The liberals." Keltone writes, "Dear unions, ladies, gays, blacks, Latinos, and liberals. Yeah, the poor." And another one says, Dear other. "You don't know suffering and repression. Love the white and evangelical Christians." And it says, the last one is, dear unions, gays, ladies, blacks, Latinos, liberals, poor, Indians, and Jews, we've got a sofa bed in the spare room, and it's pretty comfy, and Netflix. Love the Canadians." So kind of funny stuff grabbed my attention. But here again, I think this president and the Democratic Party has done a pretty poor job of standing up for its constituency, don't you think, Jake? I mean, at some point, don't they have to go, this is what we believe in, instead of wishy-washy kind of...
Well, I saw that comment, and quite frankly, I was shocked. But
what
I think
else could he do?
Well, I think it's overdue. You would think he would want to say that to the president, perhaps in a closed meeting, but this is even more forceful. I think the president has some real problems. There's some black leaders in the party who are pretty impatient, and they're at the point where I think they're going to call him out on it if he doesn't get his act together. I think this is a point in history in the next 6 months that's going to make or break him.
You look at yesterday, Romney came out with that right to work video. Basically, I thought he was the last moderately sane, still on planet Earth Republican in the field. He has now proven to me that he will do anything he has to do to win the nomination. Because, look, the reality is the Republican presidential candidates, that field that's out there right now, they've got to be off on the fringe. They've got to be out on the radical fringe to win the nomination. And Romney has proven that he's willing to do that.
I saw some of his statements. I think he's trying to one-up his competition. I think the Democrats, however, can take advantage of him because some of the positions he's taking actually are diametrically opposed to what his long-held positions have been over the years. So if Romney gets their nomination, and I personally don't think he will, but if he does, I think he's going to have a problem selling his program.
Of this field right now, I think Rick Perry's got it. Of the field that's out there right now, I think if Chris Christie jumps in, I think he automatically jumps to the front of the pack because Flavor of the Month is going to jump forward because they're going to get all of the attention. But I think Perry right now is obviously the front runner in the polls, but also I think the guy that the messaging, all that evangelical stuff, all the nonsense that they've put out on the budget, all the nonsense on the job creation that they've said that exists. But when you look a little deeper, I don't know that we want that for the nation.
Well, I think his manager's got to take him aside and tamper some of those, ridiculous things. It's one thing to have extreme positions. It's another thing to say things that are just ludicrous and make you look like a buffoon. I mean, come on. Even for the right wing, some of those things were just crazy what he said. And those, you know, when you run for president, hello, Mr. Perry, they record those. And they're going to bring them back, and every word you say out of your mouth is going to be used against you.
You mean like yesterday when he was talking about abstinence only and how abstinence only, it works. You know, Texas has
has the, you know, the third highest teen pregnancy rate, but abstinence only education, it works. It just works. I know it works. Look at my own life. Works. Personal experience. Works. See, I want him to be president, so then I can use that whole stupid Texas voice. You know, yeah. See, it works. Even though that, yeah, the facts be damned. Facts, schmacks. Don't, it works. I know it. Worked for me. Now, the question then becomes, you know, because some of the rumors I've been hearing, he's been playing on both sides of the fence. Does it really work? Just a thought. Quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we get back, we're going to talk about a couple of my favorite T-twits. Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
With a PSECU Home Equity Line of Credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Let's have a tea party, life is over soon. We'll serve the finest tea.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. You know what I love about our T-Twizzler friends? Is that they know so much that isn't. And they say so much that they don't do. You know, all we've heard from the radical right wing, you know, ever since the Reagan years, is this Horatio Alger vision of America that I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps. I made it myself. I didn't need any help from anyone. And even people like Buffett understand that, you know, they made their billions because of government infrastructure, because of government programs, because of, you know, educated workforce, whole bunch of things. They get that. It's only the simplistic. It's only the dim-witted, puddle-brained flag monkeys who go, I did it all myself. Never mind every advantage that you were giving along the way. And I could be one of those people. I've said it before. You know, I grew up in a predominantly black housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And I live in a pretty decent neighborhood now. I don't want for anything. I do pretty well. And I could easily go, you know what? I was of such strong intestinal fortitude, such moral fiber, that I willed myself out of the depths of poverty. And that's BS. I mean, you know, I got a lot of help along the way. A lot of people said, here, kid, come this way. Hey, here's some advice. None of this stuff was, I did it on my own. But you hear the right talk about it, and they love to say that. And they love to say, well, I was able to do it because I was smarter than everyone. I was fiscally conservative. I love that one. That's my favorite.
So when I think about that, I think about the T-twit that just came into my radar, a guy named Chip Kravick. He's a Minnesota State Representative, Mr. Self-Reliant. He won in 2010, you know, with that whole T-twit thing, and he's got an extreme T-twit, you know, platform. He's got that get the government out of my life kind of thing going on. And I don't need no stinking unions. And while he's been in office, what he's done is he's voted for the Ryan budget, the T-twit budget, get rid of Medicare, you know, get rid of government, get government out of our life. So when Minnesota Public Radio reported the other day that he put out his annual fiscal disclosure forms, his financial disclosure forms, 2 months late, I may add, it showed that he had gotten $92,273 in income. And it turns out that the money that he got comes from disability payments because he has sleep apnea. Now, Jake, you've got sleep apnea. Did you get $92,000 from anybody last year?
No, I didn't get a penny.
Well, he was a pilot, and he worked for Northwest Airlines back in 2007. And may I remind you, Northwest Airlines was a union airline who negotiated this kind of thing to make sure that their pilots and the flying public were safe. See, because ask any truck driver on the road here, what happens to them if they have sleep apnea? What happens to their CDL? What happens to their flying license, if you will? It gets pulled away. And they don't get $92,273 a year in disability payments. They got to find another job. So you look at this guy who said, we don't need no government. We don't need no government programs. Don't need no stinking unions. And here he is, a guy who has benefited from all of it. All the things that he seems to abhor right now. Not to mention that he gets free medical care from the VA because he served a couple of years in the military, so he gets some free medical care there. But he's against socialized medicine. Can't have that.
That's TRICARE.
Exactly. And it reminded me of the guy that, you know, I live near who, you know, took me on a real nice guy, and I like him, a super nice guy. But, you know, he invites me into his home, and he's telling me about all the things. You know, yeah, I bought this house with a VA loan. I retired with a Teamster pension, collect Social Security. I got Medicare. My wife's on disability with a repetitive use injury that Bush eventually then took away. And then in his basement, a big picture of Bush. And I'm going, massive disconnect from reality. And here again, this is the Tea Party. These are just a bunch of ticked off people who have nothing better to do than scream and kick and carry on with really no understanding of how or what government does or what unions do. Which takes me to my next favorite T-twit, a guy named Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh, you may remember, and I talked about him, he said, President Obama, quit lying. Have you no shame, sir? In 3 short years, you've bankrupted this country. He went on to say, I won't place one more dollar of debt upon the backs of my kids and my grandkids unless we structurally reform the way this town spends money. And he was saying this while right in the camera, and it looked like he believed it. It turns out he was right. He was right when he says, I won't place one more dollar to support my child. Because it turns out, Mr. Fiscal Responsibility, Mr. I pay my bills on time, live within my means, he owes $117,437 in back child support that he has not paid for 9 years. So I asked the question, saying that you asked President Obama, have you no shame, sir? The good thing here is now the ex-wife and her attorney are suing, and good for her. You want to talk fiscal responsibility? Be responsible. You made the baby, you pay for it. And what's even more outrageous is he told his ex-wife, look, honey, you know, times are tough, I'm out of work, I don't have the money, you know all the BS. And then he loaned his campaign $35,000. And you go, where'd you get that money? You know, someone's got to raise that kid, Mr. Fiscal Responsibility, Mr. I pay my bills on time, Mr. I live within my means. $117,437 in back support. He should be not in Congress. He should be in jail. That's where he belongs. And lastly, another T-twit. It appears Joe, the unlicensed plumber, is back in the news. Look, you know, again, you go back to this whole analogy of being a guy with a hammer, being a carpenter, or just somebody who tears down things. You actually have to know what you're doing to be a plumber. Or like Joe here, just playing with his pipe. That's a whole nother thing. Turns out Joe, the unlicensed plumber, is being touted as a serious candidate against Marcy Kaptur, who represents Ohio's 9th congressional district. And I started thinking about this, Jake. Now she's going to get Joe, the unlicensed plumber, after the last election. You remember who she ran against in the last election?
Nazi.
The Nazi, very good. So she's gone from Joe the unlicensed from the Nazi to Joe the unlicensed plumber. Just gifts, I think, for her. And I like Marcy Kaptur.
Marcy Kaptur's a good congresswoman.
She's one of the people who came out and said, look, if the foreclosure people come to your house, tell them, show me the note. Produce the note. She was the very first person in this country to stand up and tell all of those homeowners who were being booted from their homes. Because she knew. She knew they didn't have the right documentation. She knew. She knew all of this foreclosure stuff, all the robo-signing, all that stuff going on was plain wrong. And good for her. And again, you know, I think the sane people in the 9th District, the sane Republicans, go, well, I don't want to get a thumping. I'll stay out of it. Let Joe, the unlicensed plumber, do it. Turns out Joe's still on the speaking tour. I guess he's at the local Arby's or something now. They give him a free sandwich every once in a while.
Was this after his book?
Well, he had the book. You know. But, you know, look, what it shows me is that if you can get a good video of, you know, questioning one of these people, maybe it turns into a gig if you're a right-winger. Because that's all that was. He had one question to Obama, and boy, McCain made him a superstar.
I know people who talk to him and say he's not a bad guy, but he is, you know, he gives you the impression he's going to, and I don't blame him. He's wringing every dime out of this.
Right, we talked to him over here on the Capitol steps when he came here with the FreedomWorks people talking about the Employee Free Choice Act, where they wouldn't let me vote. we're gonna keep the sanctity of a secret ballot, but they wouldn't let me go vote.
Yeah, but the funny thing was, the really comical thing was, he was scheduled to go to Philadelphia, and they decided that there'll be too many angry union people there, so they kind of canceled it. I think that was
they didn't kind of canceled it. They canceled it.
That was a smart
and
move.
And they raced his behind home. because what happened here? Look, I mean, when you start talking about taking people's livelihoods away, this is what you're going to get. So it'll be interesting. Again, you know, I'm looking forward to the 2012 cycle. I'm looking forward to Joe the unlicensed plumber throwing his hat in the ring. That should be funny. Should be funny indeed. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. When we come back, we're going to talk with Greg Smith, president and CEO of PSECU, right back after this.
To America. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Republican Congressman Paul Ryan is still giving his unemployed constituents the cold shoulder, but that's not stopping jobless workers from continuing to demand that Ryan at least pretend that he represents them as well as corporations. Jesse Russell has more.
On day 5 of the unemployed demanding a meeting with Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan, protesters showing up in the morning were greeted by a locked office and security provided by the Kenosha Police Department. Yep. Scott Page is one of the Ryan 7, and he said the police told him they would not be allowed in the building without an appointment.
But we tried to call, and they won't answer the phone.
So basically they posted a police officer here that told us he would warn us one time before arresting us.
Meanwhile, a handful of protesters spent a second day spreading the demands for a face-to-face meeting at the Congressman's Racine, Wisconsin office.
On Friday, the AFL-CIO joins the King Center in hosting a national symposium on jobs, justice, and the American dream in Washington, D.C. It'll feature worker activists, civil rights activists, elected leaders, academics, and youth activists. The AFL-CIO's Arlene Holt-Baker says the symposium is about highlighting the needs of struggling working families, the same families that Dr. King devoted his life to fighting for. Martin Luther King III says one of the last acts of his father's life was advocating for sanitation workers in Memphis, and Dr. King firmly believed that workers' rights were an essential element of civil rights. He says unions and their members were steadfast allies in the movement for human dignity, championed by Dr. King. A new program being launched by the Environmental Protection Agency could be good news for the unemployed. The EPA announced Tuesday it was hoping to use $6 million to specifically hire the unemployed as it moves forward on the Great Lakes Restoration Program. The agency is taking a page from Franklin D. Roosevelt's Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps by earmarking the money. The program was designed to help the chronically unemployed get back on their feet and is often touted as one of the most successful aspects of the New Deal. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is cancer. This isn't a sudden crisis that's going to erupt out of the ground like some monster trying to eat us.
Fair enough.
This is a slow, wasting process.
I kept the promise till the vow got broke. I had to drink from the loving cup, stood on the banks till the river rose up. I saw the bride in a wedding gown. I was in the house when the house burned.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. So I guess the question has become, has Uncle Sam been replaced? Did Uncle Warren take the place of Uncle Sam? Because it appears that Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, they're going to invest some $5 billion in Bank of America. So it appears the Death Watch may have to wait a little bit. They're trying to shore up the company by propping it the same way they did with Goldman Sachs, prop it up a little bit. Bank of America's share rose by 10% at the close. Bank of America, they've had a few of these high-profile screw-ups. Remember the one we talked about the other night where they foreclosed on a terminally ill 71-year-old man because he paid his mortgage a week early. So I guess that's a crime there. And now that you got one in five homeowners upside down on their mortgage, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? That's why I've asked Greg Smith, president and CEO of PSECU, the Pennsylvania State Employee Credit Union, to come talk to us a bit about this whole mess and what we can do about it. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you taking the time. I look at all of the shenanigans that's going on in the banking industry, and I go, why would anybody put any money into a bank given what's going on? And B, when are we going to get this thing under control? When are we going to have somebody step forward and take control of this?
Well, that's a great question, Rick. I was actually watching the financial news this morning when that story came across about Buffett's investment, and you're right about Bank of America's closing price. It was up about 10%, but when that news first hit the wire, the stock price spiked about 26% at one point.
I mean, it's for the short term going to save them, but at the end of the day, as I'm looking at Bank of America, I mean, they've got all the countrywide toxic assets that are still on their books, and we've got some serious trouble. And I don't know if you saw it today that the Obama administration's looking at doing something. They were talking about maybe refinancing a bunch of loans at 4%. I don't think that's going to do it when you look at more than one in five homeowners owe more on the house than the house is worth.
Rick, I've actually seen numbers higher than that, more like about 28%, somewhere in there. And it's housing's a real serious problem. I'm not exactly sure what the solution is on that. Fortunately, here in Pennsylvania, we've been spared a lot of that. We haven't had the price declines that some of the other states have suffered.
Yeah, I guess we could argue that we really never saw the massive spike either.
Exactly.
And that could you argue that comes to maybe having some sane regulators in the banking industry, some folks like you who are saying we're not going to do some of the risky stuff?
Well, we, PFECU certainly, and most credit unions never made the kind of loans that got some of the rest of the country into trouble, the subprime credits and things like that. I think it's more that our region just never saw the run-up in values like some of the other areas. Those were a lot of
Your phone's horrible. Let's try and do something a little bit later. You know, when I look at this, to be honest, and one of the things that I would do, and I've said this a number of times in the past, what has to happen is, and I think the Obama administration kind of has the right thought, lower the rates a little bit, but also, you know, as we've been saying from the beginning, what I think has to happen is we have to lower the home value. We have to go in and somebody's going to have to take a haircut because, look, you can lower the rate all you want. If the house isn't worth what the mortgage is, you're still paying more for it and you're still going to have people who are willing to walk away from it. And if they're willing to walk away from the mortgage because they owe more than it's worth, you really haven't solved the problem. And for me, at the end of this, that's something we're going to have to look into, much like we did with the home ownership loan corporation under FDR. Greg, thanks for coming back. The phone was just way off the hook there.
Sure, that's all right.
You know, I'm looking at how we're going to solve some of this crisis and how we hold the banks accountable for some of this stuff. And I don't know if you saw the group of the 50 state attorney generals and the 12 financial agencies that have come together to kind of probe the banking industry, looking into this. Is what I fear is that, you know, the banking industry is going to get a slap on the wrist, and you and me, the taxpayer, we're going to get stuck holding the bag.
I'm not familiar with that specific investigation that you're referring to, Rick. I've seen, you know, there is the new Consumer Protection Finance Bureau, and I've got a lot of optimism that that's going to help rein in some of the practices. We have had some encouraging signs with credit card legislation that was passed a year or two ago, and some of the things that have been done with regard to overdrafts and things like that. Banks are, now post-Durbin starting to price in the effect of lower interchange that they're going to be realizing. And of course, you saw that the Fed came through and softened the effect of Durbin that was, as it was initially proposed by the Fed. So it's not quite as difficult for the banks, but I haven't seen many of the large banks go back and repeal some of the new pricing that they were talking about imposing. So that's a little discouraging.
Right. Explain to the listeners exactly what you're talking about with the Durbin Amendment.
Well, part of the Dodd-Frank bill was an amendment called the Durbin Amendment, and it deals specifically with what's called debit interchange. When a consumer uses a debit card, a check card, to make a purchase of goods and services, the merchant receives pays a small fee for that. Merchant might actually say, Rick, that it was a large fee, but that's a debate between the card issuers and the merchants. Anyway, the Durbin Amendment, said the Fed will be responsible now for regulating what that interchange fee will be. Well, the large banks are subject to that new rate and have basically come through and said, well, if we're not going to be able to receive as much revenue from debit interchange when our customers use their cards, then we're going to have to increase the fees on their accounts. We're going to have to maybe charge them for the use of their debit cards. We're going to have to reprice the account relationship, basically.
Right. And I was in favor of leaving kind of the way it was because, you know, Walmart is benefiting by me using my credit card because they're not paying someone to make change. It's a much smoother transaction. They're benefiting from it. I'm benefiting from it. They should have to chip in for it, I think.
Right. Well, the sad thing is that, you know, I think the Congress thought that banks were actually going to lose this revenue, you know, the fact is that banks don't give up revenue easily, and they always find a way to you know, create a new fee or impose a new charge on consumers, and that's exactly what they're doing. So if the effort was to try to somehow take revenue from the banks, it really is just going to come out of the consumer's pocket. So that's one unintended consequence, I think, that comes out of this.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, and I know you're the CEO of the PSECU here, the big credit union, but I have no idea why anybody would put money in a bank. Right. I use your credit union, and I use another one because I have some say, and the rates are reasonable, I got to be honest, it's a better deal. I don't get it though.
Well, and you know, actually, if you don't mind my telling you, just some things that our board just recently approved, Rick. That I'm pretty excited about. Just two things real quickly. Starting in January, our board authorized us to expand our call center hours. What we're going to be doing currently, we're only open until 5 o'clock each evening. You know, we hear from a lot of our members, you know, they don't even get a chance to open their checkbook before 5 o'clock. You know, they're working and things like that. Starting in January, we're going to extend our call center hours from 8 in the morning to 9 p.m. at night, Monday through Fridays, and then we're going to be open all day on Saturday from 9 a.m. in the morning to 5 p.m. The thing that's really exciting about that, besides that's about a 40% increase in the amount of available time that members will be able to reach us, we're creating 31 new jobs.
Good for you.
You know, nobody's doing that right now.
Yeah, good for you.
These are good jobs too, Rick. Most of them are full-time jobs. They have tremendous benefits. They're going to be located at our facility in State College. I wish they were down here in Dauphin County, but they're still good jobs here in Pennsylvania. The second thing that we're doing relative to our ATM program, our check card program. When you use your ATM card, your check card, to withdraw money from an ATM, if you don't use a PSECU machine, you use a foreign machine. One of the benefits of PSECU is we don't charge you when you use somebody else's machine. That fee is called a foreign fee by most other institutions, and most other institutions charge $2 for that. We don't impose that fee on our members. We give them 15 of those foreign transactions each month. We also give members a $4 surcharge rebate. In other words, if you go to, say, a PNC machine just because it's convenient, we don't charge you to use their machine, and then if they charge you $3, which is about, you know, is a fairly common rate that they charge on their ATMs, we'll give that back to you at the beginning of the next month. Well, when we first started the surcharge rebate program about 11 years ago, $4 would cover usually about 4 withdrawals a month because the going rate on surcharges was a buck a transaction back then. Well, since then, obviously, it's gone much higher than that. Starting in October, we're raising the surcharge rebate, the base rate, from $4 to $8 for all members. And then those members that have direct deposit of their paycheck or a retirement check, a pension check, something like that, if they have direct deposit, we're raising that surcharge rebate to $20 a month.
Well, great, because my wife, she's generally, you know, right, grabs some money out of that machine and, well, you know, comes out of my pocket.
Well, exactly. And I mean, we hope members will be able to continue using surcharge-free machines when they can find them, say at Cheats or something like that. But if they can't, then, you know, we've got their back.
It sounds like a great program. And you can find more information at psecu.org. And we've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Greg, great talking with you. Great work you guys are doing. And I advocate for what you guys are doing quite often, because I believe in it. Thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The higher the monkey climbs, the more you see of its ugly side. So here comes Rick Perry of Texas, trying to climb the national political ladder all the way to the presidency. He's really two candidates in one suit. On the surface, Perry is vying to be the furthest out of the Tea Party Republicans' far-out right-wingers. Sort of Michelle Bachmann with better hair. He wants to scuttle Social Security and Medicaid. Also, he says the federal government should not be, quote, regulating the environment, protecting civil rights, or even creating national minimum wage laws. At his core, though, Perry governs as an exuberant plutocrat, happily doling out public dollars and favors to the corporate rich who've invested in his political career. He also pleases the privileged by slashing government spending on everything from public schools to health care. Among the 204 wealthy supporters who put between $100,000 and $2 million into his governorship are AT&T, Bank of America, ExxonMobil, the Koch brothers, T. Boone Pickens, Harold Simmons, Time Warner, Valero Energy, and Walmart. So pleased are such elites by the return they've received on their Perry portfolio that they will form, as the New York Times put it, a vast network eager to bankroll his presidential ambitions. If this sounds vaguely familiar, think back only a decade to another corporate-funded Texas buckaroo in the White House, George W. Bush. Perry is Bush, only not as smart or ethical, and Bush at least professed to be a compassionate conservative. None of that sissy liberal stuff for Rick. He actually brags that, hey, we stick it to the middle class and the poor so the rich can get richer. Yeehaw! This is Jim Hightower saying, so when Perry promises he'll do for America what he's done for Texas, pay attention. It's no idle threat.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
I give my head to the new constitution. Take a bow for the new revolution. Money and freedom, they change all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees.
The country, we've been seeing this discussion, this trying to ram through changes to the minimum wage laws, trying to ram through their anti-worker stuff. And, you know, the one in Missouri just grabs me the most, where they basically wanted to eliminate all state control of child labor. Basically just saying, you know, whatever you want to do with those kids, go ahead. You know, they're on their own. I look at New Hampshire now, who New Hampshire has been really kind of a hotbed of real anti-worker stuff. The right-to-work stuff that Romney's pushing, the fact that their legislature's trying to ram through some of it. Fortunately, their governor, John Lynch, has been strong, vetoed, threatened to veto some stuff. In fact, vetoed this change to the state's minimum wage law. But this one representative, her name is Carol McGuire. She's still pushing it, saying, "Wow, that minimum wage way too high. That, you know, that pesky minimum wage. We could just create so many jobs. We'd have jobs galore if we didn't have to pay minimum wage."
We could pay those people a buck an hour, and there'd be jobs everywhere. Problem is nobody'd have any money to live, but you know, they'd have jobs, right? Here's what she said, you know, about the minimum wage. You gotta love it. She says the minimum wage is very discriminatory, particularly for young people. They're not worth the minimum, she says. They're not worth it. Instead, they should be paid about $5 an hour. Because, you know, they're, you know, kids who take those jobs for $5 an hour, they're not worth it. They're not worth the minimum wage, Jake. They're not worth it. Sorry.
What she means is we can take advantage of these kids.
Well, you know what we can do is then what happens, you know, we've got these kids now. Maybe we could bring people in on J-1 visas and pay them $5 an hour.
They would if they could.
Jeez. You know, some of the thoughts of these Republicans, I'll tell you, I wish I do. You know, I'm starting to look at Ben Stein in a whole different light. I mean, now Ben Stein seems to be a moderate to me, where at one point Ben Stein was the fringe of the Republican Party.
Oh, but Ben Stein has a good head in his shoulders. You might not totally agree with him, but he could articulate his positions. And he was a, if there's any left, he was a moderate conservative.
You know, I was watching the O'Reilly clip where Ben Stein, you know, O'Reilly went through this whole right wing screed about, you know, we know that, you know, tax cuts create jobs, and we know that this. And Ben Stein came back with this clip that just, you know, makes me kind of go, I like Ben Stein.
All right, Mr. Stein. Now, you know that everything I said in that memo is true, correct?
Absolutely not. I would say almost every part of it is wrong, except for the fact that I think it's better if he's on vacation because he works terribly hard and he deserves a vacation.
Yeah, I think everything you said was wrong. And he goes on to say later on that I'll eat your shoe if you can show me where unemployment and taxing the rich have anything to do with each other. And again, you know, it's what these right wingers believe. It's what they've been told in their schools and how they've been indoctrinated. Now I sound like Limbaugh, but it is. It's what they've been you know, force fed. It's that religion that they've been pushed into, and it's kind of interesting. The other stuff that keeps popping up, you know, this whole right wing playbook that's been going on. You know, first go after child labor, go after worker rights, and then go after poor people. And remember I was talking a while ago about Rick Scott's idea that we were going to drug test all welfare recipients? Anybody, we're going to test them all. We're going to spend a boatload of money that we don't have testing people so that they can eat. While the first set of results are in, the Department of Children and Families in Florida has done at least 1,000 tests thus far, and they have come up with a whopping 2% that didn't pass for unspecified reasons, and a whopping 2% who tested positive for drug tests, which means you got 20 people, and you spent thousands, anywhere between, they spent, $60,000 on just retesting alone, all of this money that they've wasted, this program that they've put into place is going to cost $178 million over the course of the year to test all of these people. You've caught 2%. 2%. Which brings me to the other right-wing dream. Because, you know, there's all these problems out there, like those welfare recipients. They're all drug addicts and alcoholics, right? That's common knowledge. We know that. We know they're all drug addicts. They're lazy drug addicts. That's what the right keeps telling us, isn't it? Isn't that what they keep saying? Driving around in their Cadillacs, drinking Dom Perignon, right? That's what they believe. They drew to their core. They're also the ones who believe that everybody is out there to cheat in voting. You know, those are those poor people. They go and they vote 4, 5, 6 times. And those old ladies, they vote 100 times apiece. There's so much voter fraud. There's voter fraud everywhere. They look around the corner. Voter fraud. Voter fraud. And we know that, well, there have been four documented cases of voter fraud, the way Republicans are saying it needs to be stopped in the last 10 years. Four. And one of those cases was one guy four times. So you had these cases, four individual instances. Four. Yet we're in the state of Pennsylvania, going to spend $11 million to stop four cases. Again, it's much like the drug. You know, why don't we start testing people for drugs who collect welfare here? So we can get those 2%, because we're really going to crack down on those 2%. Granted, we're going to spend millions of dollars doing it, but, you know, we're just going to take that from education anyway. Who needs to educate those children? Who cares about them? We're cracking down. We're cracking down, Jake. Going to get those voting cheats. We're going to get those four people, and when we do, they're in big trouble. Come on. But, you know, this is the bill, man. This is what they're doing. And you look at the reality is there's not a voter fraud problem. The problem is, and I'll tell you where the voting fraud problem is. It's the Koch brothers of the world who their front groups send out these emails telling you to, oh, we move voting day to the next day, or don't worry about it, postmark it a week late. Here in the state of Pennsylvania, the House Appropriations Committee estimated that next year, just to provide free government IDs to voters who don't have them, it's going to cost, this is the Republicans, $4.3 million. The rational people, folks, like our friends over at the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, said, no, it's going to cost more like $11 million. But here's the thing. Even if it only costs $4.3 million, is it really worth $1.08 million for that one guy? Was it worth it? Couldn't we have spent that more than $1 million in a better way? Just a thought. Just a thought. But that's what they're going after, man. The stuff that really doesn't matter, but it's... Again, I go back to, they have no vision. They have no clue. They have no idea. They have no leadership skills. All it's about is campaigning, sloganeering, and tearing down. That's what this is about for them. Where are the jobs? Where are the bills that are going to create jobs? Where's all of the job training? Where are all the industry incentives? Where's all this stuff that they keep telling us is going to help save our economy? When all we keep talking about, how to steal rights away from workers, how to steal minimum wage away, how to destroy prevailing wage, how to destroy this, how to destroy that, how to tear down and honestly and truthfully completely change everything that created the largest, wealthiest middle class in history.
Well, I think the irony is, since you opened the Pandora's box, I mean, we could have a whole session on that subject, but here you have a Republican Party that's accusing these four people of cheating our democracy. Now, this is a party who have appointed people in the Supreme Court who have ruled that, you know, corporations are people, and you can't limit their campaign contributions, and they have poured tens of millions of dollars, soon to be hundreds of millions of dollars, into our system and are literally taking away our democracy. You talk about irony. You talk about irony. They don't seem to be concerned about this, that money that's basically buying our democracy, but yet they're concerned about literally a handful of people who cheated at the ballot box.
Well, see, the
problem you tell me which is more important.
You're advocating for cheaters is what you're doing. You're going to stand up for those four cheaters.
No, not at all. I mean,
we caught them, didn't we?
You catch them and you apply the law. I don't have a problem with that. But you talk about massive hypocrisy.
But these are the people who are going to save our budgets. These are the people who are fiscally responsible.
Well,
these are the people who are going to help the taxpayers.
I think in the big picture, I truly do believe this, they have overplayed their hand.
We shall see. 2012 is around the corner. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to our good friend Lee Fong from Think Progress back after this.
Class majority. Rick Smith.
My name is Precious.
and I help people with mental illnesses live better lives. I work for you, the taxpayers, as a mental health case manager. People with mental illnesses can hold jobs, pay taxes, and provide for themselves. But many of them need help from social workers like me to reach their full potential. Imagine if you or someone you love needed that kind of help and had to go on a waiting list for 7 years. That's what 10 years of budget cuts have already done to mental health caseloads in our state. I know these are tough economic times, but without support services, some individuals get worse and can be a danger to themselves and their communities. And that costs all of us much more in the long run. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they vote to increase funding for programs that help people with mental illnesses lead full lives.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, the more I see going on in Washington, the more my head kind of spins, and I see, you know, what's going on there, and it's almost like a soap opera, and not even a well written one. That's why I've asked our good friend Lee Fong, investigative researcher and blogger for ThinkProgress.org, to come talk to us about a couple of things. Lee, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I see your buddy Scott Keyes. He's on a number of Republican candidates' no-talk list, and I'm surprised, you know, given the control that they have over the media, that they let anybody in the room, and you especially.
Well, you know, I think part of it's just been luck, and, you know, Scott and I try to be aggressive, so, you know, sometimes they don't notice, and we get a question in.
Yeah, the whole thing with Herman Cain, I'm surprised they let Scott near anybody.
Oh, no, that's a great example. You know, Herman Cain definitely knows Scott now. I think he's not only on the blacklist, he's not allowed to be in within 15 feet of him.
Yeah, I'm sure they've got a restraining order. But, you know, I look at this thing with Daryl Issa's staffer, and this is just nuts to me. Explain this. This guy was a former Goldman Sachs VP who decided to change his name. Explain this to me, because I'm not getting it.
Well, it's a little bit convoluted, so bear with me for a second. This individual is, like many people, burrowed into our government. He is a shining example of the revolving door corruption that's endemic within Washington, D.C. But basically, this guy went into the Securities and Exchange Commission as a regulator. And then, like so many other SEC employees, he sold out and cashed out, went to Goldman Sachs, into their division that works with regulators, you know, something that I would call lobbying, contacting his old colleagues at the SEC to change different commodity regulations and comply with them. Then he left the firm, went to a lobbying firm, and mysteriously he says to honor his grandfather who died in 1944, changed his name, thus obscuring his identity, and went to work this year for chairman of the Oversight Committee, Daryl Issa. And what did Issa appoint him to do? To oversee issues relating to his former employer, Goldman Sachs, and other investment banks. Not only is this individual, now named Peter Holler, working on various bank regulations, he literally wrote letters under the Oversight committee letterhead, which carries the full power of the law. The Oversight Committee has a broad jurisdiction to subpoena and pressure government agencies. And he was writing letters to the SEC, the Federal Reserve, the FDIC, other bank regulators, telling them to back off of new Dodd-Frank regulations that impact Goldman Sachs. He even wrote a letter directly to the SEC about an issue pertaining to a big multi-billion-dollar deal between Facebook and Goldman Sachs. So he's basically a Goldman Sachs lobbyist that's burrowed into the government and is now not only entrusted with protecting the public interest, but has the full power of law to investigate government regulators that are supposed to be fixing our economy and holding banks accountable.
See, this is the kind of stuff that you know, I agree with the radical right on. This is kind of some of the stuff I agree with the T Twizzlers on. There are parts of government that are broken that need to be fixed, and this is a shining example of, you know, this kind of stuff that really ticks people off. And it isn't surprising to me that it's Daryl Issa. It's not surprising to me that it would be a Tea Party person involved in this, because they hate government. They want to destroy it, and you know, I see this as just another step at doing that.
Well, you know, I agree with you there, Rick, because, you know, the folks who should be handcuffed and sent to jail aren't just people like Goldman Sachs and the folks who blew up our economy and the housing crisis. It should be the regulators at the SEC who refuse to do their job. That being said, corporations have a fiduciary duty to their shareholders to make profit, and they'll do it any way possible, and that means also corrupting government. Government has a role in protecting the public interest. That means prosecuting crimes, getting rid of systemic risk, and not allowing people to basically rip the American public off. So if we've got to reform one institution, we've got to look at government first.
Absolutely. And the thing that gets me is, you know, you call him a lobbyist. I call him a spy. I mean, if these were countries, we'd be executing this guy for being a spy, I would think.
Well, the whole Washington, D.C. scene, it's filled with deceptive language, and the whole lexicon is broken. Campaign donations are a regular thing. I would call a lot of these things bribery.
I get it, too. I get it. But you got this guy who he changed his freaking name. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this before?
Well, you know, in fact, if you look at Daryl Issa's staff, and, you know, he's not unique. You can look at other committees, and the same thing's going on. But I did another story. It didn't get as much attention because there wasn't the odd name change thing. But I did a story last month. One of his other top staffers maintains a financial relationship with his old lobbying firm. He even wrote it on his personal finance disclosures, which I obtained and published on Think Progress, where he was working at a lobbying firm that represents private and nonprofit, but mostly private student lenders. Now he went to Daryl Issa, maintains a financial relationship with that firm, even got a bonus to leave that firm and enter government, and now is working with Daryl Issa to harass and basically stop the new Consumer Financial Protection Agency that, of course, regulates student loans. And many of those things are very abusive.
I mean, you know, there are times where I go, you know, I agree, government's broken and we need to get in here. And one of the first things that I think needs to happen is we need to pass, and it's never going to happen under the Republican control, but, you know, maybe the Tea Twizzlers will do it, I don't know, but pass something to close that revolving door that says, you know what, if you worked for government, you can't come back for 5 or 10 years or some length of time, this jumping back and forth. I mean, look at the Mineral Management Service. They were literally in bed with the people they were supposed to be overseeing.
Look, I agree with you. If there's an opportunity for a coalition, I'll even do a joint byline with the Tea Party reporter if they want to write something like this up. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at the Tea Party politicians, they're the worst part of the revolving door. Let me give you an example. Over 14 new Tea Party members of Congress hired lobbyists as their chiefs of staff. Two of them, Senator Marco Rubio and Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, they actually hired chiefs of staff from the same lobbying firm, the lobbying firm founded by a bunch of old Cheney officials. Beautiful. Called Navigators Global, I believe. DC Navigators. The same lobbying firm that represents big banks, pharmaceutical companies, and other corporations has lobbyists running the office because chiefs of staff, bear in mind, basically make all the decisions that a senator doesn't have time to do. They help pick the staff. They actually help advise them how to vote. They help actually write the legislation. They make the key decisions. This one lobbying firm, DC Navigators, has their operatives running the staff for two United States senators. I mean, that's atrocious, and, you know, it's a scandal. But, again, the DC media doesn't report on it.
And, you know, for people who don't follow politics like you and I do, or a lot of my listeners, you know, they listen to something like that, and that's when they throw up their hands and they go, I don't want to hear nothing. I don't want to be involved. I can't change it. It's broken. It's never going to be changed. It's that kind of stuff. And which is why, you know, when the grand pledge came out, when the Republicans had their big pledge where jobs, 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 and restore confidence in Congress, you know, for a brief second, it was very fleeting. I thought maybe they would take care of some of that, but it seems that they're worse yet.
Look, I try to be an optimist, but it's very hard. And I look at what a lot of these Tea Party Republicans are doing, and I look closely, and I try to find ways for the government to actually root out waste and root out corruption. And I'd love to see an opportunity to support them, or at least see something that's helping society, but I just haven't found it yet. I'm keeping my eyes open, though.
Let me ask you the last question I got for you, Li Fang. This weekend, I guess it's the Bush videos coming out. 9/11, I think it's going to be on National Geographic. What they're saying is this is basically just a big hour-long promo.
Looks like it. We did a quick report today. It's basically a video glorifying Bush, and it goes through and allows Bush to have an unfiltered megaphone. Notably, National Geographic is owned by News Corp, which owns Fox News, so it shouldn't be a great surprise. But I really doubt they're going to bring up how the Bush team politicized 9/11 and within hours after the towers came down. I mean, mind you, the Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, started drawing up plans to invade Iraq I think 4 hours after the Twin Towers came down. I mean, it was blatantly politicized. I doubt they're going to teach the American public about that. And we actually found a quote from the producer of this documentary just a few weeks ago saying that he's not even interested in the facts. He just wanted to get a good positive spin about how Bush was feeling that day. So, you know, more 9/11 distortions, but, you know, that's the media for you.
But on National Geographic, when I saw this, I'm going, National Geographic, why there? What has that got to do with National Geographic?
It's a neutral brand. If they put this on Fox News, even the teabaggers would see this as just another Bush promo. I think folks know that. But National Geographic is a powerful brand, and what News Corp is doing here is promoting Bush in a way that can be appealing to most Americans, even Democrats. And that's very sophisticated, but hopefully people realize these are the same people that are behind Fox News.
Yeah, I hope so. And I'll probably watch it just so I can see the entertainment value in it and the propaganda in it. Amazing stuff. Li Fang, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me. Take care.
All righty. Li Fang, investigative researcher and blogger at thinkprogress.org. Again, some great stuff over there. We'll take a quick break. Back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Are when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it happen!
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Here's exactly why I don't like elitist pinheads. This guy, Kevin Drum, over at Mother Jones. You're a basic halfwit. Mother freaking Jones. You know, what popped into my head, if Mother Jones, Mary Harris, actually read this piece of garbage, I think she'd backhand him faster than my mother cracked me when I told her she was giving me a headache. But Mother Jones, this is the kind of garbage now from... This guy should be fired. Simple. That's it. Done. He writes, from my analysis of the past month's bylines, New York Times readers were treated to views of 41 academics in their op-ed pages, 40 writers and journalists, 9 presidents and 1 vice president of an organization or think tank, 4 current and former political office holders. He says, while the contributions opined on a wide variety of topics, why do Russians hate ICE, to drones alone are not the answer, and reflected geographic diversity, they originated from a rather narrow class of well-educated and successful individuals. And you know, excellent observation. Great job. Straight A for you on this one. Pat on the back. Nice job. If only now you shut your pie hole right here. That'd have been good. He goes on to write, when contributions did occasionally focus on working class issues, isolated, vulnerable, and broke being the one he points out, it told of the fast decreasing fortunes of Hispanic families in America. They were expressed in the voice of an Ivy League academic. He continues by saying, part of the problem may be a lack of submissions, and perhaps these op-ed pages are as represented as the submissions they receive. He says, but if that's the case, it surely wouldn't be difficult for the papers to find individuals from the other half with worthy and fresh things to say. Perhaps editors, he opines, could take more active role in soliciting contributions. Certainly the Internet has proven, he writes, that there are lots of articulate people out there who want to speak their minds. He says, for editors, it could be easy. It could be as easy as looking at blogs or combing other comments. You know, great put, a little responsibility on the editors. You know, these right-wing editors like it, okay, maybe not so bad. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to think of this, he says. He says, on one hand, yes, it would be nice to hear from actual people with actual lives a little more often. He says, on the other hand, I have to admit that I am skeptical that the blogs of America are full of working class diamonds in the rough who would expand our visions
if only we had a chance to read them. He says these folks get interviewed on local news with some frequency, and most of the time they're not especially enlightening. And I hope he understands. I hope he realizes that that's the reason that those people were chosen to be put on TV. That they said dumb things, that they're for entertainment value. And I remember when I was a kid watching All in the Family, they'd throw Archie Bunker on TV as the guy to give the other half of the story, because the Fairness Doctrine was going on back then, and they would have some very articulate person come out and make all of their points, and then Archie Bunker would come out and flub all of the opposite point. So now he wants to be a little cocky. He says, yes, yes. I'm elitist scum. At least he admits it. And he says, and technocratic elitism scum at that. More interested in bloodless charts and statistics than I am in actual human blood, sweat, and toil. Anyone who reads this blog knows I'm not joking either. I really am more interested in what the big picture evidence says than what I'm eavesdropping on the kitchen table conversation of middle-class families. Basically what he's saying, he could really care less about actual people. And he's at least admitting, he's at least telling you, I'm going to lead this douchebag. He's there, He goes on to say, still, it would be an interesting experiment. Every day for a month, let's insist that Andy Rosenthal dig up and run a submission from someone who's literally a working stiff and has absolutely no other credentials. Let them tell us what's bugging them. Whether it's the owner of a dry cleaning shop complaining about onerous regulations, a truck driver tired of long hours, or a waitress who wishes her customers weren't such a-holes. Whatever he says, I'd have pretty low expectations for this experiment, which means it wouldn't be hard to impress me. And I listen to this, and the whole argument. I mean, you could put that argument that he's making to women, to minorities, all down the list. The whole reason that we wouldn't let, the slaves be free, the women vote, the whole reason we wouldn't let, 18-year-olds vote, all of those reasons. And, he's telling you, I'm an elitist douchebag. And he is. But he works for Mother Jones, and I actually respect Mother Jones magazine. And for them to take that kind of an elitist approach to me is why I hate the extreme left. That, it's not about the actual people. It's not about the actual stories. It's about the stuff they can make up. And it's disgusting to me. Simple, simple stuff. State Representative Philip Hinkle. Name ring a bell?
I've heard it before.
Philip Hinkle, state representative in Indiana. You may remember him because, he went on Craigslist looking for a good time. He admits that he paid a man to have a good time, but he says we weren't going to do anything illicit. We were just going to talk about baseball and The View. He invited this 18-year-old young man to come up and go to this hotel with him, and they were just going to look out the window and talk about baseball and how wonderful it was outside. He paid the kid $80. Paid him, but no, he didn't do it. He didn't. And look, I wouldn't be on this guy's case if he weren't one of these anti-gay marriage people, if he weren't one of these right-wing hypocrites. And I'm now coming up with an idea. I think we should just give this clip to every right-wing Republican, and they can just play it at their press conferences.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
Yeah, turns out, again, he's claiming that, they ripped me off. They stole my BlackBerry and my iPod, and they stole money, and I wanted my stuff back. Do you buy it? Do you think he just wanted to talk about baseball? Do you think he rented a hotel room? Do you think he rented a hotel room just to look out the window with some 18-year-old young boy? This 60-year-old married man. And given the fact that he's not going to file a police report over the stolen items, does that not kind of say something? Maybe just a little bit? Because it says a lot to me. But, And I would not have a problem. I wouldn't have a problem if this 61-year-old guy picked up an 18-year-old guy, consenting adults, and they went to his house, a hotel, whatever. And they did whatever it is that they chose they wanted to do. If he weren't a hypocrite. If he weren't one of these people trying to make other people's lives miserable. And look, the whole gay issue is not mine, but it is a civil rights issue. It is, you know, and there's that libertarian part of me that says, leave me the hell alone. And then, please, please, don't be a hypocrite and say you're something that you're not. This world would be such a better place if we just had people who said, you know what? I'm going to stay out of your life, you stay out of my life, and we'll be happy.
And why is it that it invariably involves Republicans? They tend to be publicly anti-gay. I mean, one after another after another after another on the Republican side has done that in the last couple of years.
I'm still waiting for the frothy one to come out. I'm waiting for Santorum to come out. You know, because it would not surprise me in the least. You know, I just don't understand why. Just be who you are. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me one bit. Not at all. But I guess, you gotta have your clip.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
Mr. Wide Stance himself. But, you know, you think about this. How much energy has been put into this? How much money have we spent? How much time, energy, worrying about what other people are doing? Why aren't we creating jobs? Why aren't we making this country the infrastructure place that everyone wants to be, the marvel of the world that we once were? Why aren't we focusing on making education a top priority, where it's our students who are scoring 800 on the math SATs? Why aren't we doing that? Because obviously we don't want to spend the money for that. It's easier to point fingers and divide people. So, I'm hoping that we put this stuff aside. I'm hoping to say, I don't care about it. What I care about is jobs first. I care about feeding the children here. I care about that stuff. But, again, you know, what you've got, you got the Pat Robertsons of the world. Well, you know, there are cracks in the Washington Monument. And you know whose fault that is? Well, of course, it's the gays. You know it. Come on. Just because there are cracks in that big phallic-looking thing. See, we know now. And what's amazing to me is people still pay attention to this crackpot. Oh, Lord help us. Help me, help me. Interesting story. And again, you know, I you got to love Wisconsin. And I do. The Paul Ryan thing just keeps getting better and better and better. Again, they're telling people that they cannot, under any circumstances, go in to see their representative. Sorry, this is private property. The owner of the building has said that you can't park in the parking lot or enter the building where your elected representative is. And I love this, because now what they're saying is that government has been privatized, that you and I don't have the ability to assemble in front of a government-paid-for facility. Because that's what they're telling you. No more can you protest in front of a congressman's office, because they're renting space from a for-profit entity. And I got a problem with that. I've got a massive problem with this. And, you know, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, they basically said, look, folks, we will arrest you. You can't come in. We're not going to let you on the property. If you do, you're going to be arrested. And you look up just up the road here in Scranton with that Barlotta idiot. Well, we're going to have a pay-per-view. You can pay for me to watch on TV. Same thing Paul Ryan wants to do. $15 to see Paul Ryan. I wouldn't pay 15 cents to see Paul Ryan. But he thinks his constituents are stupid. And I hope he gets elected right out of office. And I hope they send him right packing. I guess the question is, do we put up with it? Sure hope not. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Republican Congressman Paul Ryan is still giving his unemployed constituents the cold shoulder, but that's not stopping jobless workers from continuing to demand that Ryan at least pretend that he represents them as well as corporations. Jesse Russell has more.
On day five of the unemployed demanding a meeting with Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan, protesters showing up in the morning were greeted by a locked office and security provided by the Kenosha Police Department. Scott Page is one of the Ryan Seven, and he said the police told him they would not be allowed in the building without an appointment.
So we tried to call, and they won't answer the phone. So basically they posted a police officer here that told us he would warn us one time before arresting us.
Meanwhile, a handful of protesters spent a second day spreading the demands for a face-to-face meeting at the Congressman's Racine, Wisconsin office.
On Friday, the AFL-CIO joins the King Center in hosting a national symposium on jobs, justice, and the American dream in Washington, D.C. It'll feature worker activists, civil rights activists, elected leaders, academics, and youth activists. AFL-CIO's Arlene Holt-Baker says the symposium is about highlighting the needs of struggling working families, the same families that Dr. King devoted his life to fighting for. Martin Luther King III says one of the last acts of his father's life was advocating for sanitation workers in Memphis, and Dr. King firmly believed that workers' rights were an essential element of civil rights. He says unions and their members were steadfast allies in the movement for human dignity, championed by Dr. King. A new program being launched by the Environmental Protection Agency could be good news for the unemployed. The EPA announced Tuesday it was hoping to use $6 million to specifically hire the unemployed as it moves forward on the Great Lakes Restoration Program. The agency is taking a page from Franklin D. Roosevelt's Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps by earmarking the money. The program was designed to help the chronically unemployed get back on their feet and is often touted as one of the most successful aspects of the New Deal. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can go to the website and watch the video or download the podcast, or if you've got a smartphone. You can download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Our quote of the day comes from Abraham Lincoln. Labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could have never existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration. I think the Republican Party needs to find its roots. I think Republicans need to start thinking back to the people who made the party what they were, not the people who are destroying it, not the people who are taking it down this radical path that I think, and I'm hoping next November, a thumping happens and the party realigns itself and we begin to have a real two-party system of people who have the same goal, making this the greatest country on earth. That's the hope. So under the heading of crumble, baby, crumble, because the right, they have this idea that, we can starve the beast. They
they quoted quite often. They love their Grover. I guess
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Now they've told you that already. So if the debt ceiling thing had you upset, if the FAA thing had you upset, I remember where they said, "Well, we're going to allow those thousands of workers to be kicked off the job. We're going to let the companies, the airlines, take all of that tax money that should be going to the coffers of we the people. We're going to let them put that in their bottom line." And then Paul Ryan says, "Well, you know, that's how business runs. You know, that's what happens. They put it in their pocket. Yeah, in their pocket. Don't worry about it. What happens?" Well, maybe you should just probably drop out for a little bit, because late in September, what's coming down the pike is the extension of the federal gasoline tax. Now, normally this happens, every once in a while, and it's like the debt ceiling. It usually it comes up, it's voted on. There are a couple of voices, around the edges, complain about it, but it gets done. And then that money, the $1 billion a day, goes into doing what? Well, building our roads and bridges, making sure that our roads are $1 billion every 10 days. $100 million a day, that goes into making our roads and bridges. And I say that's not even enough. We need much more investment, because it's going to create jobs. It's going to do all the things that we need to do. And, maybe we might have to be able to get products from place to place. Well, what's going to happen in the middle of September and towards the end is you're going to have a bunch of Republicans, led by the likes of Tom Coburn from Oklahoma and Jeff Flake from Arizona, along with a whole bunch of tea twizzlers. They want to abolish the tax. They want to do away with it. And what they want to do is, here we go, Paul Revere's going to be riding, the tenthers are coming. They then want to lay it on the backs of the states. The states who are already struggling enough to make ends meet, the states that are already having hard enough time keeping their books balanced, now we're going to heap the highway system on them. And there's part of me that goes, you know what, maybe that's not a bad idea. And maybe what we need to do is stop giving states, especially the southern states, more back than they actually collect. Maybe there's something to this tenther thing. Maybe we need to be 50 individual nations where we only worry about Pennsylvania, or we only worry, if you live in Ohio, about Ohio, and forget this whole national thing. We're Pennsylvanians, and we will fight everybody else, and we will keep our money. It's ours. And we'll go back to how weak the Articles of Confederation were, because that's where the radical right wants to take us. They want to have the states being able to do whatever they want without the federal government being able to stop anything, and thus making 50 individual nations. And maybe we need to do this, because what's going on, and this is why I hope that there are some sane, rational Republicans who are going to step forward. The highway system that Eisenhower put into place. And where are the good, decent Republicans like Eisenhower? The good socialist Republicans, where are they? People who thought, we need a highway system. What we have now, we have people who want to allow us to go back to not being connected. Want to take us to third world status. And I got to be honest, it's not even nice to say third world status, because they're at least trying. So what happens? I used to drive a truck for a living. What happens? Pennsylvania, Ohio has the best turnpike in the country, highest rated road in the country, because they invest in it. You go into Indiana, the federal highway money dried up. The state of Indiana is going to have to take care of it. What happens? Well, we use that money to give tax breaks to corporations. The roads are going to have to suffer. So you and I, we get our cars ruined for tax breaks for the Indiana millionaires. Or here in Pennsylvania, same thing. I understand Pennsylvania's got, I think, more roads than any state in the country, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, absolutely.
So you look at this and you go, what? This is the vision that the Republicans have.
I think the Republicans have gotten forgotten a simple concept. You know, Ike Eisenhower, you know, God bless him. He had this idea, and he followed through, and the country was at the right time and the right place, and there were leaders in Congress whose vision. But people seem to think, oh, boy, that enabled me to, well, maybe drive from Pennsylvania down to Florida or wherever. But I think what we're overlooking, Rick, is that was a huge economic stimulus. Because trucks could get around easier, you had a better highway system, you could get goods and services quicker. That enhanced the economic growth, and that enhanced, our economic prosperity. Now, when the Republicans talk about infrastructure, it's always about dollars and cents, but what about the big picture? If you want to improve the economic climate in an area and in a state, you have to enhance the basic transportation. And we have sorely, sorely neglected it.
And this is why I look at this, and you may call me crazy, call me paranoid, call me whatever you want. You know, I still look at that Mason-Dixon line that kind of means something to the folks in the South. And the very people who are pushing this radical agenda are those Dixiecrats, are those Southerners, who now see their infrastructure in good shape because we have invested as a nation in every corner of this country. They now see the Northeast, and they see the Midwest, the upper, what they're calling the Rust Belt now, crumbling. And now they're saying, well, we don't want our money from these states like Oklahoma or Mississippi or anything going to repair their roads. Screw them. We've got ours. And this is the Republican mantra gone to the next step. I've got mine. Screw you. I don't care. And that's really frightening from a national perspective. Because I'm an American. I live in Pennsylvania, but first and foremost, I am an American. It's this country that I love. And to see people who want to tear it apart, to want to tear it down, rip it to shreds, and to destroy that document that they claim to, one, understand, and two, love, I got to question that. And I rarely question anyone's patriotism, and I rarely question anyone's love of this country. But I look at this, and you got to ask that. You got to wonder, Jake.
You wonder what goes through the minds of those very, very conservative Tea Party people as they vote after vote after vote, turned her back on something which should have been automatic, and that was lifting the debt limit. Now, I understand, and I respect it, I don't agree with them, but they are saying, look, we have spent too much, and I agree, we have spent too much, and it's got to stop somewhere. But it shouldn't stop at the expense of the American people.
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. You say you agree. You agree on what, spending too much?
I agree that we spent enough on education. We disagree with how we should address that issue, obviously. But I agree that in some areas we have spent too much. How about the wars?
Absolutely. I'm just clarifying what, though.
My point is this. If you want to be responsible, you then pass that and then go back in and sit down with your colleagues in Congress and you talk it out and you come to a reasonable compromise. That's the way government is supposed to work. You don't come in like this massive runaway train and cause a train wreck in the American economy, which is exactly what they did. And you wonder where their minds are. I can't believe that these people are, they're certainly not stupid, naive perhaps, ignorant of the way government's supposed to work, but my God, they have the God-given intelligence to understand what they did.
Free colonoscopy screenings for all Tea Party members. We can find their brains.
If only it was that simple.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
The
higher the monkey climbs, the more you see of its ugly side. So here comes Rick Perry of Texas, trying to climb the national political ladder all the way to the presidency. He's really two candidates in one suit. On the surface, Perry is vying to be the furthest out of the Tea Party Republicans' far-out right-wingers. Sort of Michelle Bachmann with better hair. He wants to scuttle Social Security and Medicaid. Also, he says the federal government should not be, quote, regulating the environment, protecting civil rights, or even creating national minimum wage laws. At his core, though, Perry governs as an exuberant plutocrat, happily doling out public dollars and favors to the corporate rich who've invested in his political career. He also pleases the privileged by slashing government spending on everything from public schools to health care. Among the 204 wealthy supporters who've put between $100,000 and $2 million into his governorship are AT&T, Bank of America, ExxonMobil, the Koch brothers, T. Boone Pickens, Harold Simmons, Time Warner, Valero Energy, and Walmart. So pleased are such elites by the return they've received on their Perry portfolio that they will form, as the New York Times put it, a vast network eager to bankroll his presidential ambitions. If this sounds vaguely familiar, think back only a decade to another corporate-funded Texas buckaroo in the White House, George W. Bush. Perry is Bush, only not as smart or ethical, and Bush at least professed to be a compassionate conservative. None of that sissy liberal stuff for Rick. He actually brags that, hey, we stick it to the middle class and the poor so the rich can get richer. Yeehaw! This is Jim Hightower saying, so when Perry promises he'll do for America what he's done for Texas, pay attention. It's no idle threat.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
To the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So Bernie Sanders, again, you know, this guy, I wish we had more folks like Bernie. But Bernie says he's going to introduce legislation when Congress comes back that's going to strengthen and preserve Social Security. Here's his idea. And I know it's something I've talked about for some time. He's going to propose the idea of lifting the cap on Social Security so that the Warren Buffetts of the world, so that they pay the same rate that I pay. You know, I pay that tax rate on every dime that I earn. Warren Buffett pays it up to that $106,000 level. He's saying, and I've said this for the longest time, you want a stimulus? You want to stimulate this economy? What you do is you drop that rate down. Drop it down to maybe 3% for the employee, 3% for the employer, and take the cap off. And I think that would put more money in the pockets of the employer, put more money in the pockets of the worker, and it would solve our crisis. Simple stuff.
And of course, Mr. Romney is opposed to that. He wants to extend the age that you can retire and reduce benefits. Imagine that.
Well, it's the two different views on how to get to solve the problem. One person's got, Bernie's got a good idea. Romney's, well, it is what it is. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Helen on line one. How are you doing tonight, Helen?
Hi, how are you? I'm glad I could stay awake and listen. Sometimes I fall asleep. It's not because you're boring. It's because I'm tired.
Well, this is a late time.
Yeah, I wish they'd let me get on earlier, but... A couple nights ago, the gentleman was talking about the military budget. And, they cut all of the posts, Air Force bases and stuff with that BRAC mess.
Right.
And it really did decrease the way the federal government was supporting a lot of towns. And people realized how much they lost jobs.
Yep.
it wouldn't hurt if we would bring our boys home from Europe and let Europe take care of themselves, you know, all except for some of the hospital that we bring soldiers home to for special care so they come back somewhat repaired.
Right.
But, yeah, that would help to stimulate our economy if we spent our military budget within our country. Halliburton has no problem. I believe it's Indiana. I don't know if you looked at your – you probably don't buy MREs.
No.
But I know somebody that does, and they're piled up in the kitchen. And I checked into the company that makes them, and it's an Indiana company, and it's a subsidiary of Halliburton. Oh, imagine that. But they're making a lot of money. That's a Republican-run place that keeps complaining about the federal budget, but they don't mind taking those jobs to make these MREs that are not even the kind of nutritional value that men need out in the field. They need to eat two of them to get minimum daily requirements for the one meal.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I just don't understand why the Democrats aren't jumping all over that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know what's in the Democrats' mind. You know, this whole thing with Romney coming out with this right-to-work video, you would think the Democrats would jump all over this, you know, to try and make amends with labor. I think they've got some problems. And you bring up Halliburton. Halliburton is not an American company. They're headquartered in Dubai. Just so they can get away from paying taxes. So they're taking our tax dollars and moving them to a place like Dubai.
And they're putting they use all the tax havens, which I sent you an email and I, along with a lot of other people about this new book by Nicholas Shaxson. And, Treasure Islands, and it has, One of the subtitles is The Men Who Stole the World, and it's all about the tax havens. Most of them are under the Commonwealth countries, and he's a British Commonwealth subject, and he says, I'm really ashamed of being English. And he points out also that Delaware, Wyoming, banks in those places are also tax havens, and people don't realize it.
Yep, Delaware, Wyoming, South Dakota, Nevada, yep, those are all tax havens.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's just, I guess there's a lot of wealthy Democrats that have money in them, and that's why they're not bringing them up. Oh, yeah, our vice president.
Well, he's one of them.
Delaware.
He's one of them, but we got a governor right here in Pennsylvania who won't close one of the loopholes here to keep dollars
exactly.
And profits here.
Yes, exactly, and, you know, I'm glad you're still fighting the good fight.
We're working on it.
At least you're a lot younger than me, and you can stay.
Thank you so much, Alan. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
You have a great night. No, I mean, look at it. You know, you talk about these tax havens. Panama with these free trade agreements.
Absolutely.
You know, Panama can be another one of these, the Cayman Islands. And, you know, just right here, right just down the road, you got Delaware, where a lot of profit leaves the state of Pennsylvania, ends up in Delaware.
You say could be. You know that it will be. If this free trade passes, Panama will. There'll be money flowing in there from all over the world.
Yeah, but I'm told, and I haven't seen the language yet, and I haven't really read it yet, but I'm being told that they've addressed some of the concerns that I have with the with Panama being the next tax haven. I haven't seen the language yet. I'm still looking.
Okay, let's be nice.
But they're saying that maybe. They haven't said definitely, maybe.
What's the benefit of having a free trade agreement with Panama?
There is none. None that I could think of. You know, at the end of the day, you know, maybe you're talking about throwing a bone to another area. But the part of this that's important to the financial people is that tax haven. That's the only reason. Understand these trade agreements, and we talked about this last night. These trade agreements are really about one thing. That's enriching the investor class. stealing wages away from workers, having another threat to the working people of this country because, oh, if you don't take this pay cut, or if you don't give back this wage gain, or if you don't give this concession, we're going to move to China, or we're going to move to India, or we're going to move to Mexico, or we're going to move here, we're going to move there. At the end of the day, the politicians in D.C., and I don't care what side of the aisle you're talking about, they're really not on the side of workers. This blind faith that we have in this bizarre trade model that has cost us millions of good family-sustaining jobs over the years is the fault of both parties. And I would say I would blame Democrats more than Republicans because I would hope that Democrats would care about me and care about the workers of this country. I know Republicans don't give a tinker's damn, but you would hope. And especially after the 2008 election where Obama was coming around saying, oh, trust me, I'm not going to pass any trade agreement that doesn't have strong environmental, you know, here it is.
You can trust me when I say that whenever trade deals we negotiate come to my desk, they are going to be good for American workers, that they'll have powerful labor and environmental protections, and that we will enforce those protections.
Absolutely. Gonna enforce it. But you know the part that gets me?
You can trust me. You can trust me.
That's what gets me. I sat 20, 30 feet away from the guy when he said it. And I believed him. And now here we are talking about the same Bush trade policies. The same Clinton trade policies. The same H.W. Bush policies. The same Reagan trade policies. The same neoliberal trade policies, Jake, that got us into this mess. Going all in, doubling down on bad trade agreements, do you think that's the answer?
No, absolutely not. What's really disappointing, two things. One, you just played it. I can remember him making, he made some fantastic speeches, motivated the American people, but one of the cornerstones of every speech I heard him make, he talked about the free trade agreements and how this country is being hurt, and he was going to end that.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement if George Bush is insistent on sending it to Congress because the violence against unions in Colombia would make a mockery of the very labor protections that we've insisted be included in these kinds of agreements.
And that situation hasn't changed. The last numbers I saw, I believe, is either 92 or 94% of the murder cases. Nobody has been brought to justice. No one.
But here's my problem. I can sit here all night. I can bash Obama left, right, center. I can bash him for these trade deals. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. You know Michelle Bachmann's on board.
Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, baby.
You know, she's on board. You know the rest of the seven Dwarfs. You know they're all on board. So there's no salvation on the extreme right. Only more misery over there. Only more double. They're going to triple down. As Obama's doubling down, they're going to triple, quadruple down.
And therein lies the quandary of labor. You got to walk that line. You want to be effective. You want to exert pressure. But at some point, there has to be enlightened self-interest. And that could be a difficult choice. But there's a lot of anger out there in labor, and rightfully so. He has let us down in some key issues.
But to go back to this for a second, this thing with Bernie Sanders, I think excellent. Excellent idea. Smart thing to do. And it's something I've been advocating for some time. This idea that we just lift the cap. You want to solve the problem, be honest about what it is. It's an anti-poverty program. And he goes into it. He goes, you know, before we had Social Security, you had half of the seniors in this country, half living in desperate poverty. Desperate poverty. That doesn't happen anymore. And why? Why is it? Well, it's because we've drawn a line in the sand and said, you know what? It's not going to happen. They're going to get health care. We're going to make sure that that they have that minimum standard of living. Today, less than 10% of seniors live in poverty. And that's still too high, in my opinion. You know, I need, you want to double down on something? Double down on the war on poverty. You want to double down on something? Double down on raising standards for the poorest and the hardest working at the bottom.
You know, if you ask the average American, Rick, I would bet you more Americans than not would tell you that Social Security wasn't an anti-poverty program. It was a retirement program.
No, it was never meant to be
retirement. You're right. But the perception is that it was, and I think sometimes the Democrats, and maybe even those of us in labor, we don't pound home enough the reality of America. And I was going to do a little vignette, and I'm still going to do it, on one of the politicians thinking running for president. He's attacking Social Security, but yet, and you touched on it, but since you opened the Pandora's box, you had three choices prior to Social Security, and two of them were bad. You could work till you died. You could wind up in what they called poor houses, which they basically warehoused you in horrible conditions. Your last years of your life were not good. You didn't want to wind up in a poorhouse, or you were lucky and you had a family that could take care of you. And those were the realities for millions and millions of Americans prior to Social Security.
But you got these folks now. They want to tear it down. They want to go back to the good old days. Poorhouses. Well, I mean, you had the guy in New York who ran on it. I mean, come on. You had a guy say, well, you put those people in the poorhouses. We'll teach them how to brush their teeth.
Oh, yeah. That'll be, you know, wow. No way. Absolutely no way.
We have definitely fallen
down. That was a disgrace in America.
We have definitely fallen down the rabbit hole. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ken Bezanet, Talk Radio News Service. Back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make this thing happen!
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's happening in Washington, D.C. and abroad, Ken Bezanet, Talk Radio News Service. Ken, thanks for taking time for us.
How are you tonight, sir?
I'm good. So are any movement on the Where's Waldo, or I mean, where's Momar?
Yeah, where's Waldo? Where's Waldo? We got to reserve for safe. Where's safe? He's the one who's like pops up. You got to give him credit. The rebels say they have him captured. Then all of a sudden, a day later, he does a news conference, and then he disappears again. So that's the Where's Waldo. As for Momar, the dictator continues to elude capture. But rebel government is hoping that they will be able to pick up his scent by dangling a $1.4 million price tag on his head. The bounty appears to be a carrot more than anything else to Gaddafi insiders. The likelihood of an average Joe seeing this guy on the run is slim to none, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, you remember during the whole we're gonna smoke Bin Laden out, we're gonna get him there alive.
Yeah.
Didn't we offer like a $20 billion bounty?
Yeah, right. But here's a big difference. Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. There is one very significant difference, and that is when we were hunting Osama bin Laden, and for that matter, when we hunted Saddam Hussein after Iraq II, it was basically the United States hunting him. This is a case where pretty much a whole country wants to get a guy.
Yeah.
He has run out of people.
Everybody threw in a couple of bucks, and, you know, here's my goat. And you know,
the last loyal guys were guarding the press, okay? And they had to be told, hey, you guys are the last stronghold in Tripoli.
Wow.
You really want that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That hotel, the Ritzos? That's how it went down. Those guys finally realized they were the only thing that anybody was talking about Gaddafi people holding in town.
Yeah,
that's a good time to hand the guys your gun and say, hey, sorry, we're just going to go now, okay?
Yeah.
That's exactly what went down.
Whatever you want. You know, here you go.
It was basically it. And then as the journalists were leaving, not much longer than a block away, they discovered, rebels masked. But somebody very wise somewhere gave the order and said, no, don't attack, because if there's a firefight, these guys could get killed.
And that would be bad for PR.
Let's sit and wait these guys out. That was very well done.
Yeah.
You know, and that showed a lot of discipline. This whole mission from the start reeked of Western and other established nations trained people being very close to things that were going on.
Right.
I mean, they pulled off an amphibious landing. Come, give me a break.
Yeah, well, we spend a lot of time, energy, and money training folks all around the world, School of Americas and all that stuff, making sure that there are people that we can count on.
Yeah. Well, they basically hit an army in the Nafusa Mountains in the west, and they trained those guys, and when they came out, they just rolled.
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, there was training going on in the east, and those people came in various different ways. They ended up, that army that was always looked like it was tied up fighting down around Brega, turns out had just basically tied up so much of Gaddafi's forces down there that they couldn't be used in a defense of Tripoli. And then whenever Gaddafi's people started moving to try and do that, they were just sitting ducks for NATO in the desert and in the open roads. And that was basically what was happening. That's how the battle of name of the town is going to elude me. Zawiya. That's the town about 30 miles south of Tripoli. It was the crossroads, and it was the last refinery that he had access to, that Gaddafi had access to, and they basically took that. And when Gaddafi tried to reinforce it and counterattack, they were just annihilated.
Yep.
By NATO. It was very, very well coordinated attack. That's for sure. They knew the date. There was a lot of talk in the last couple of days, from people all over the world, all of a sudden, about this thing's going to be short again. And that had gone away after 6 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People had stopped doing that, but then it popped up again, and we see why. I mean, they even had a date certain that they knew things were going to go down. You know,
it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out once, if they capture him, and what happens from this point. What government comes out of this? Do we end up with someone worse than Gaddafi down the road?
Well, that's the risk. UN, the U.S., among others, requested that $1.5 billion in Gaddafi's assets be unfrozen. The UN said okay to that. And it's for humanitarian aid, it's for payroll, it's for just keeping things going.
Yep.
But the larger treasury, you keep a close lock on that, and you wait to see what this government looks like. And you hold that over that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is a great bargaining chip.
I don't care
if you're left, right, or center, buddy. That's just old-fashioned smart bargaining.
Yeah, well.
And that's what the West has to do. It has to hold the line on, you know, not giving them big chunks of money until, you know, that we see how things are gone, you know?
Yeah, just a little bit at a time. Some interesting news coming out of there, though. It turns out Gaddafi had kind of a thing for Condi. I guess he had a photo album, and my question kind of was there a box of Kleenex nearby?
Jesus, it was creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Condi, really?
He had done an interview with one of the Arab networks a couple of years ago where he went off about her and just, you know, he called her Lisa. And he repeated it, Lisa, 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 three times. Pretty famous interview. It's out there. MSNBC has been airing it today. So it's on YouTube and places like that as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But that's worth checking out. He obviously, she was very important to him. And no diplomat in the Western world today, even given the good news about how this thing has all gone down for NATO, is having a worse day than Condoleezza Rice, I would have to believe. On that news.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Other news, Ron Paul says he's not all that thrilled about Gaddafi's fall.
hey, you know what? He's not all that thrilled about it. And, like, he doesn't move according to the polls. You know, I saw his statement. I read it, I think, twice. And the fact of the matter is that is hardline libertarian.
Right.
Don't even call it Tea Party. That is just hardline libertarian perspective. And that is exactly what I've come to, what people should come to expect from Ron Paul, because he doesn't move with any trends. He's not making a fight for the middle. He's just simply going with his people. And he's in the midst of a fight where he once looked like an outlier. I mean, think of his previous election runs. He had a good run in Iowa.
Yeah,
both in the straw poll 4 years ago.
Yeah, he definitely got a following.
Yeah, and also in the caucus he did fine as well. And, you know, the way he drops those fundraising bombs on the internet, and he raises $1 million+ in 24 hours every time he does it, the kind of campaign that he's running, he stays in till the end. As we've said before, his following is so loyal that they got the signatures for every state a long time ago. So, you know, he just basically stays in it and watch how he potentially accumulates numbers. Now, there was a poll right after the straw poll, the Iowa straw poll, and after Perry's announcement, Governor Perry's announcement. And that was by Rasmussen, and that had Governor Perry up 29-18 over former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, and the followed by Bachman and then Ron Paul. And now we have the first poll confirming that, essentially, with a little bit of movement. And Gallup has, again, Perry at the top with 29% and followed by Romney at 17%. And then Ron Paul at 13% and Representative Michelle Bachman at 10%. They've flipped.
Right.
She had been in third, and now he's in third. And here's my whole argument. There was a time when he was seen as an outlier in all his previous elections. Now you put him in this field with Governor Perry, with Michelle Bachman, with Newt Gingrich at any given moment, and certainly with Rick Santorum. And he, listen, he's got the extreme policies, like, for instance, this Libya thing is probably not very palatable to a lot of people. Certainly not after, you know, quite frankly, we could use a win, and this one looks like it might be, at least for the time being.
Yep.
I mean, the long game is yet to come, but it's nice to see the short game finally winding down, because that had gone on way too long for a president who said this will be a couple of days.
Yeah.
He needed this by Labor Day, is the way I felt about it, and basically got it.
Yeah.
And now it won't. The time won't matter as it gets closer to the election. What will matter is he's going to have erased any national security attack the other side makes, because they can just come back with, "Are you kidding me?" Ask Bin Laden. Ask Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, excellent point. And you know, the thing is you know, like you said, Ron Paul, very, very libertarian, and some of that I agree with. That whole stay out of the foreign entanglements. I agree with George Washington. We shouldn't be getting our nose into everybody else's business.
Yeah, you know, but we're in this one now, and now there's sort of an investment, and there's a lot of collateral, and there's a lot of opportunity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This democracy movement, as long as you keep it pure, and you know, the academics, the scholars, the secular Arabs in a pan-Arab movement have to step forward. There has to be an Arab middle class, just like there has to be an American middle class.
Absolutely.
To counter the extreme left and to counter the extreme right.
Yeah, because I think Ron Paul said it was earlier today. I think he said, you know, he was afraid that if we cut spending too fast, there are going to be riots like in Europe.
Yeah.
Same kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people believe that, and I think some people believe, no, not here. People are too respectful.
No.
You know what I mean?
Hungry is hungry. Hungry will do what hungry has to do to get not hungry.
Well, I think it has to get somewhat worse, but not too much. I don't know how much farther it has to go before that you might see somebody snap along those lines, but I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not either. Ken, I appreciate the time. Always great talking to you. Thanks so much, Ken Bezenet, Talk Radio News Service. Talk to you again.
Have a great night.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Chinese grandpa won't harm. Kill the conscience, so
stomachs. Rick Smith.
Workers in the late 1930s began exerting their recently guaranteed right to organize and join unions. Millions of workers flocked to join the labor organization of their choosing to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and working conditions. Factory, mill, and mine owners, not eager to embrace the changes, fought vehemently to deny workers their rights. As company tactics grew more heavy-handed and brutal, the workers' organizing methods changed. Sit-down strikes became a way for workers to demand their rights and to force management to listen. With a wave of a handkerchief, the tip of a hat, workers would shut down their machines, lay down their hammer, and sit down. Workers at the Hershey Chocolate Factory in Hershey, Pennsylvania, seeking to reduce the 60-hour-long work week, decided to form a union. Initially, an agreement was reached, but as the economy took a downturn, the company willfully violated the agreement by laying off the most senior workers, those who just happened to be the most ardent union supporters. The workers voted to strike the very next day. At 11 a.m. on April 2, 1937, a red handkerchief was waved and the workers began their first sit-down strike in Pennsylvania's history. The company reacted by forming the Loyal Workers Club. These strikebreakers consisted of hired thugs from New York City and local farmers, dairy producers, and shopkeepers who were dependent on the factory. On April 6, Hershey organized a loyalty parade. After hours of rallying speeches, the lathered-up Loyal Workers Club mob found pipes and clubs that had been manufactured at the Hershey planing mill. The angry mob headed to the Hershey factory to throw their strikers out. Songs of solidarity sung by the striking workers could be heard from inside the factory as the angry mob burst into the plant. Blocking the only exit, the Loyal Workers Club, loyal only to management and greed, began pummeling the workers as they tried to escape. The assault left numerous workers bloody and beaten, many unconscious. Within days, Hershey reopened and recognized a renamed version of the Loyal Workers Club. In May of 1938, the National Labor Relations Board ruled Hershey had violated the law and the company union was dissolved. Soon the workers joined the Bakery and Confectionery Workers Local 464, who have faithfully represented the workers ever since. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Here's an interesting story from Florida. Kind of got, you know, Pennsylvania-Florida connection kind of going on here. Authorities in Florida said they arrested a guy who stole $820.20 worth of groceries. He took meat, he took beer, he took champagne, and 12 rolls of toilet paper. Stole it from the Winn-Dixie, evidently. He went out and he was putting it in the trunk of his car when deputies pulled up and asked him to, you know, to hand over a receipt. Couldn't do it. So they arrested him, along with the cases of beer and the Charmin toilet paper. Here's the thing. $820.20. That sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it? Well, we have got the wife of the budget secretary right here in the state of Pennsylvania who can beat that. In fact, in October, she's going to go on trial for theft of $955 worth of groceries from a local grocery store. So in your face, Florida, we got Georgine Zogby. I'm like, you know, come on. You're telling me that the budget secretary job doesn't pay a nice dime? You got to steal, allegedly steal almost $1,000 worth of groceries. Now she gets to go home. In fact, when she gets a DUI, the police come and take her home. When I got a DUI, the police beat me up and took me to jail. They didn't take me home. Her, they come get. They leave the governor. They left the governor to pick her up to take her home. But she needs to, you know, evidently, you know, it's not enough.
Maybe she's a kleper.
And now that guy up in New Hampshire that I talked about last night, who was trying to steal $20 worth of baby food to feed his three-month-old, he's going to do serious time. And he should for leaving the baby behind, but not for stealing the baby food. I mean, this is just ridiculous.
Wow. By the way, since you're talking about stealing food, did you catch the story of the husband and wife that stole stole food at a grocery store for their wedding. Did you catch that story?
I mean, weddings are expensive, man.
Well, yeah, but for the what a way to start out a marriage. You know, you could have your honeymoon in jail.
Well, Bonnie and Clyde, man, that's how they got started.
I mean, I had to tell that story.
It was it was that first thing that you know that high of that first thing, and before you know it, they're you know they're off on a killing spree.
Anyway, a nice story coming out of the Great Lakes Restoration Program has earmarked about $6 million, believe it or not, and they're going to hire. They're going to target unemployed workers. The nice thing is it kind of harkens back to something that maybe we ought to consider, the Civilian Conservation Corps, that many people consider one of the most successful programs of the New Deal and FDR. And it's nice to see that they're putting people to work, and it's nice to see that they're putting people to work who are unemployed. So that's a nice story. Not such a nice story coming out of Florida. The young senator in there, a hot shot, considered a rising young star in the Republican Party, Senator Marco Rubio. I think Senator Rubio needs to do a little homework about the history of Social Security and how it affected the elderly in our country. He has come out with some pretty damning statements. This is what he said. He declared that the key social insurance programs like Social Security and Medicare have weakened us as a people and have affected the moral fabric and strength of the American people.
Yeah, you people wanting to eat, weakling.
And as we discussed, maybe he needs to, you know, really do his homework and find out how bad it was in this country for the elderly prior to that. As I said, you had three choices and two of them were bad.
You know, there are people like that that I would like to strip them. You know, it's like that TV show last night we were talking about in China where they take the big millionaire and they put them on the street and make them live as an ordinary person. I would love to see them go back to the neighborhood I grew up in and exist. Just exist. I would love to. And then let's see that pull yourself up by your bootstraps. In my neighborhood, they take the bootstraps and beat the snot out of you.
You know, you think about that, Rick. Which state has the highest percentage of retirees?
Well, Florida.
Florida.
A bunch of idiots.
Hello, hello, Marco. You're talking about a large number of your constituents, and you're attacking something which a large part of your senior citizenry are taking advantage of. Not to mention the fact that if you look at the population in this country from 35, think of the literally hundreds of millions of Americans that in their retirement, in so-called golden years, were saved from a life of misery and poverty the last years of their life. It is absolutely, we've said this before, but it bears repeating. I think even some Democrats forget. Social Security is the most successful social program in the world, and I defy anybody to come up with a more successful social program anywhere, ever. And we should never, ever, ever forget that. You talked about, Rick, you talked about the NLRB decision, which basically just, the NLRB said a very simple rule. You just got to post on an 11 by 17 poster card informing workers of their rights under the NLRB. Well, the right wing, as you said, Rick, really exploded all over the place, making outrageous comments. Just to show you how bad it was, the National Federation of Independent Businesses called it unprecedented overreach of its authority, a punitive new rule, a new low, a trap for millions of businesses. Peter Schomburg, former NLRB chairman appointed by former President George W. Bush, told Bloomberg News it's arbitrary, it's capricious. And on the right-wing website, GOP USA, the new ruling is another disgusting government intrusion into private business. Now, as you explained also, Rick, the NLRB says employers will not be required to distribute the notice via emails, voicemail, text messaging, or related electronic communications, even if they customarily communicate with their employees in that manner. So they're making it as easy as possible. It's simply an extension of some of the rules that they already had in place, but yet you would think that the end of the world is coming from the business community. Just slightly over reaction. Other bad news, Kasich and Governor Perry. Ah, boy, two of the heroes of the Republican conservative movement. Well, as of Monday, they have allowed a deadline to pass to apply for hundreds of millions of dollars. To be specific, $555 million in Texas and $176 million in Ohio in federal funds for unemployment insurance benefits. The money was part of the 2009 economic stimulus package. To receive the money, both states merely had to slightly expand eligibility requirements for receiving the unemployment compensation, but both Perry and Kasich turned their backs on the money and the jobless workers. At least 33 other states found no problems with the requirements, but Texas and Ohio claimed the modest increase in cost for expanded eligibility was too much to bear. But here's the irony. According to the AFL-CIO president in Texas, the communications director says some high-ranking Perry administration officials believe the state could have easily afforded the small extra cost. According to Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, calculated that the higher cost of modestly improved eligibility, which was a condition of receiving the stimulus funds, would have been offset by the $555 million for more than a decade. In other words, they could have easily afforded it. And again, these people, I think, go out of their way to punish those who are the victim of the economic crisis. $550 million that could have been used for the unemployment, and they turned their backs. Shame, shame, shame.
Well, we need tax cuts for the wealthy. You know, they need a little extra caviar at their weekend retreats.
One would hope that people are paying attention.
No. We're too busy. We're too busy, you know, making ends meet. We're too busy out there working our butt off. And that's what they're hoping for. That's what the radical right is hoping, that you got your head down, that you're just trying to make it through the day. You're not going to see all of this stuff that's going on.
Well, isn't it ironic that Perry claims he's created all these jobs?
He has.
Yet he had available $555 million for unemployed. That must cover an awful lot of unemployed in Texas.
Well, they put those unemployed people back to work, working their minimum wage jobs. And then they were able to pull the entire wage scale down. You know, that's why they were fighting so vehemently against unemployment. They didn't want to extend it because now you got these people desperate. You took those good-paying jobs away, and the thing that was helping them hold on, the 40% of the wages they used to make, just helping them hold on, now you can get them to work for, you know, 30% of what they used to make. It's good American business. It's how business is done. See, down here in Texas, what we do here, we make them start a little hungry, and then we offer them a crummy job, and then they got to take it. Got to take it. Give them a cracker. They like crackers. Little water. It's insane. It's absolutely nuts. What else you got for me?
Well, that's it for tonight.
Wow. You came well prepared. Look at you.
Well, I did.
And 1 minute to go. Very good. Thanks for the report. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, especially that last, the Jake update, you can download it at thericksmithshow.com. Or if you've got the smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take Jake on the go with you. Never leave home without your Jake. So you can Jake it up wherever you go. Again, thericksmithshow.com. That's the website. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. It's been a great evening. I had a great conversation with Abe Amoros, the Pennsylvania Legislative Director for the Laborers International Union. Of course, Lee Fong, our good friend at thinkprogress.org. And, of course, Greg Smith, the president and CEO of My Credit Union, PSECU.org is the website there. Again, thanks for being here. We'll see you again tomorrow night, as is every night. And, of course, Stitcher.com. Stitcher for your smartphone. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
The
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg. And so we find ourselves at the end of the program. Holy cow, I lost 3 minutes. Wow, okay, so I got to get out of here. Rick Smith is next. Thanks, everybody, for making everything happen. Thanks for the one contribution we have received in the last 3 days. It really does help keep things going. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain.